If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
We're never ready when we do the intros live anyways, so I mean, we can just, you know, just gonna fucking talk through it. Here's the intro. Welcome to the CU podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. Sun's out, guns out, alongside Ian Ferguson. He's there somewhere. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about
Spike.
Evo 2002 being canceled. There's Spike in the background. The Atari VCS has a release date. The Sega Astro Mini game price is increasing next gen. Who is watching Quibi? It's both rhetorical and literal. Also, Patreon poll, blah, 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 blah. Real quick, Ian, before we get into why you are virtually here, like a hologram, holodeck suite, it's a thing. We got wares. We got certain NES guidebooks. We got t-shirts. We got enamel pins at ultimatenintendo.com. We also now have, as you can see on the desk, I finally dug them out of the garage. I have original RBI baseball unlicensed Tengen labels. I don't know where I got them from. I believe it was a swap meet like 6-7 years ago.
Some
19-year-old had a roll of them, and I bought them at the time. So they're available on the website as well. I've already sold about 50 of them. So if you want to make your coffee table, now's your chance to do that at ultimatenintendo.com. And real quick, shout out to Numbskull, who sent me the quarter-size Galaga arcade right there. Ian can't see it.
I'm jealous.
It's really nice. It's really nice.
I don't want the Galaga one is cool.
There's a
but
Dig Dug
they
one.
No, they do a Centipede one.
That's the one you want, but they do have a Dig Dug one if you want to get into
that's nice.
Mr. Driller Cinematic Universe.
I have the shirt on. Yeah, that's
who
I'm wearing today. That's all I've been doing this weekend is playing Driller.
So you're self-quarantining just in case?
Yeah, I don't want to get into entirely why, yes, needless to say, someone accidentally exposed themselves to
person of
COVID, yeah, and then exposed Vani to it, which of course exposes me to it, which means that we are now playing it safe. The lockdown for Vani and I, the quarantine will be over for us on Sunday. It's crazy, like, you know, I'm not even really going outside. You know, when the lockdown started, obviously masks, staying in, but occasional runs to the grocery store. Yesterday, I had groceries delivered to me for the first time ever. I had booze delivered to me for the first time ever. So that's that. I mean, we're fine.
That's just the way it's got to be right now, to be safe.
Yeah.
And people are acting crazy, of course. There was two craziness videos that happened. A guy in Costco, like, someone asked him to wear a mask, and then he like threatened, like he aggressively approached him, and he's been fired. They already found out who he was. It's in Fort Myers, Florida. That came out this morning. And then there was a crazy woman in Target with the $40,000 Rolex that tore down the display with all the masks for no fucking reason at all.
I saw that. She was wild.
And the police came and realized she was a nut and asked her questions. And the police officer said, okay, that's all we need. Meaning that, okay, we know you're a nutcase. We're going to have you evaluated probably for like 48 hours, whatever they usually do, 72 hours. So they arrested her and got her the hell out of there. So we're not exactly like, you know, bring out the best in one another with all this. It's we are like it's like our version of the zombie apocalypse, except we just can't act sensibly.
That's my problem. We talk about this every week and some people, you know, hate it, but I feel like it's important to, you know, keep it up there. It's not something that just goes away. And you know, Vani and I feel fine. I don't actually necessarily think we got it, but if I went to work and found out that a bunch of customers got it or my coworkers got it, I'd feel fucking horrible. So, you know, just take the time off.
Or I guess if Pat got it, you would.
Well, that's why I'm here, Pat.
And Pat.
I mean, that should go without saying. I mean, you were like, well, you know, we could do it with a mask. I'm like, we should probably just.
I could put you the other side of the room. We could. I could do
that. Yeah, no. It's just not worth it. I don't want to listen to you complain to me if you get COVID.
No, I would sign a waiver. I'd sign a waiver. I can't sue you if I got sick from it. And of course, Ian, you've watched the new Unsolved Mysteries this weekend since that came out like 3-4
days. Oh, yeah, Bonnie and I watched all 6 episodes. We watched 3 in one night, and then we finished it up in the second night. We took care of it quickly.
What are your general thoughts on it? Yeah, you actually wrote it. It's on the patreon.com/CUpodcast. You wrote your thoughts.
There's thoughts up there. But in general, I thought it was very good. Seeing the nod to Robert Stack in the intro was huge. That was so key for me.
You saw my Twitter reaction to that.
I did, yeah. But that was so key to me going forward and enjoying it. They were like, okay, we've acknowledged
it. Was proper. It. You have to.
And I think that's not where it stopped, honestly. They didn't even try to bring back a host. They tried to bring back Dennis. They tried to bring Dennis Farina in as the host. Farina in like 2008, 2009, 2010. And he just repackaged the older, mysteries to see if they could get more hits on him. And it doesn't work. When someone like Robert Stack is so ingrained, I think, in the, in your memory of it, when you bring it back, the best option is not to try to replace him. It's to just do away with that.
Yeah. Go a different direction. That role. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they focused mostly on unsolved murders, which I kind of figured they would do. I kind of assumed that, you know, aliens and ghost stories, especially today with this kind of technology and the ability to capture things. I think for a lot of people that wouldn't hold the same interest. I don't think it would hold up as well. It would probably come across as a lot cornier or cheesier than it originally did. So I do think, you know, focusing on true crime, that's popular right now. And also it's the thing that, you know, audiences are actually the most likely to be able to help with, which I think is a good aspect.
Well, sure. They can't call in and say, yeah, I know all about the aliens.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, no. I met that alien myself.
Oh, I saw something the other week. Right. Can you give me a favor? See if your system mic is at 100% while I talk about Unsolved Mysteries. If you go into your little settings real quick. So this is my thought.
Is it too loud? Is it coming in?
No, it's not too loud. It's not loud enough. I like to have it as loud as possible.
Oh, okay.
So I can lower it on the mixer. This is my thoughts on it. I overall liked it more than I didn't, but I was not in love with it.
Okay.
I saw the first episode. I saw the third episode, the one that took place in France. With the family that they all, you know, they all died and the father disappeared. And I saw the first 25, 30 minutes of the second one last night when I fell asleep to it. The issue I have with these is that they're obviously shot as like movie documentaries. They're all about between 50 and like 53 minutes. They're a little bit shy of an hour. There's a lot of padding to these, a lot. And I understand with the way people like to watch these things nowadays, that you want to find out more and more about the people involved and the family. But the original Unsolved Mysteries was like, all right, we got to tell you the story in like 11 minutes. We have to get in and out in like 10 minutes. We'll give you the basics. We'll give you like a little bit background for like 30 seconds on the family and let's go. This, I appreciate them like obviously talking to the family members and friends, but there's so much unnecessary information that it's just stretching out for like in the French episode. They're talking about like, well, what their family crest meant and talking about the history of the town. And I'm like, I really don't need this information to try to get into the mystery of it. It's nice, but you're really stretching it at this point, talking to some of these people, the friends. And that was my biggest, my complaint is that I like fell asleep the first time I watched the French episode. I had to try it again. These can be done in like probably a half hour, 35 minutes. You can cut out 15 minutes of these and I think you'd be fine for it. You don't need an hour for these, you know?
Sure. I think with, I think you could probably fit two mysteries
in an hour. Yeah.
In an hour. Yeah. You know, you don't need to go and do the, you don't need to go and do, you know, four or five or whatever it was with updates like in the original. But I think I even said in my writings that I would have preferred, you know, the original multi-mystery format.
Or just even do them half hours. Because like I was watching the hairdresser one, episode two, where the woman disappears and...
God, that one was terrifying.
Don't tell me the ending because I only got halfway through. I literally at one point, Eam, fast-forwarded like 2 minutes and I lost nothing. I hit it because it was like the son talking and then it was the coworker talking about like her being hired and how it was interacting with her. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's cool. You knew her, but this has nothing to do with the mystery at all. And that was the only complaints I had. It's like, it was literally filler to me as to make it, to pad it out to 50 minutes. You didn't have to have every episode be 50 minutes probably, but they padded it to make sure they were all that length. Probably because that's what the Netflix deal is. It's probably based upon the amount of time, but that's not the format I liked about the original, obviously. It's a different format. That's all.
Sure.
It's fine. Like the first episode was really, really cool, that mystery with the guy taking the header and they have no idea how he got there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think they beat the shit out of him and killed him and then placed him there and put the hole in the roof. That's what I think, but whatever.
I think it's more likely that they cut a hole in the roof.
That's what I mean.
They shoved his ass through there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, and then the French crazy father killing the family. That wasn't so much a mystery as just what happened to him. So to me, that was like borderline unsolved mysteries. It was like, well, we know he killed them. Probably he killed the family, but where is he now? Like that was the only kind of weird thing about that one to me.
Oh yeah. No, he definitely killed the family. And I think it was partially like a,
it was a wanted one. The unsolved mysteries. Like
yeah. It's to put some of that variety back in there that used to be in there.
So I'm looking forward to the alien episode. There's no ghost episode, right? I thought there was going to be a ghost episode.
No ghost episode. There is an alien episode. Yes.
Okay, I would prefer the ghost stuff, but that's okay. But anyway, yeah, the Robert Stack, just the little ghost image is like perfect. And I do think the remix of the theme is tasteful and well done. I do think that
it is. It's good. I don't think it was piano.
You don't have to reinvent the wheel there. Mm-hmm. And that was the unnecessary fan actually asked us that question. What do you guys think about the new season? Any theories for the episode? Well, I gave you the one on that. In terms of the end of the third episode with the French guy who walks into the French wilderness, basically, and the mountains, I think he escaped and he got on a cargo ship or went somewhere. Like they said, that he might have gone to South America. He knew Spanish and English and he disappeared. That's what he did.
Yeah, I think that's it too. I mean, I don't.
Spoilers.
Look into it, but yeah, I feel like there's probably enough people, or you could probably still disappear pretty easily, especially depending on when that crime was. That was something that blew my mind too, because I watched, you know, a lot of Forensic Files and the old Unsolved Mysteries. Was seeing cases that occurred in like 2005 and after. I'm like, oh, that was yesterday.
Sure. In terms of the first episode with the guy doing the financial newsletter and working for the financial place. Yeah, they killed him because he was going to say something probably to someone and it cost him a lot of money. I mean, that's obvious.
Yes.
I mean, that is my guess. The friend had some involvement. Either if the friend didn't have involvement with the killing himself, the friend knows about it and is not talking. I mean, that's the friend never said anything. And the company put out a gag order to not talk about it like the day afterwards. So
right.
That's like some 90s, you know, lawyer crime novel shit that happened to that poor sap. Called in the middle of the night and he goes there and then, you know, the detective working on the crime is transferred like 3 weeks later. So like he can't even continue. So it was just like the worst storm you could have had. And all the other police thought that he killed himself. And I was like, what are you kidding? How can he have jumped like all that length to get there? and go perfectly, like a perfect swan dive straight down. Like, it was insane. Like, go watch that. That first episode to me is that's an unsolved mystery to me. That you had the creepy note in the back of the computer that like what the hell is this? Like, that's, there's some.
So I actually talked to Vani about that though, because we were watching it together. If you pick up one of my like notebooks and were to just look at it, I leave notes like that all over the place, and they mean something to me. And I was like, you know, they probably read really, really creepy. I hope I don't die.
Okay. Wait, don't tape it. Don't tape it to the back of a monitor.
No, I don't.
Fold it.
I certainly don't.
So,
do
like,
that.
Is it a clue? Is it, you know, is it a cipher? Anyway, all right. Check out Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. Hopefully, it comes back. 6 episodes. I gotta get through the second episode. And to see what happens to that woman, where it's always a creepy thing when like you get the witnesses that say, oh yeah, I drove by and I saw either a man or a woman talking to her and it was weird. Mm-hmm. That's always the weirdest shit, because like you saw something bad that was going to happen, or the start of it. And it was the middle of the daylight too. Ooh, it's just creepy. It was like noon, or like, yeah. Oh God. I'm getting all creeped out thinking about it.
Blah.
All right. When will the Switch, Nintendo Switch, be back in stock? We got the skinny. This is from Forbes, a Forbes article on here.
So, yeah, they were saying it looks like, you know, should be by the summer. That's not an exact date.
Well, we're at the summer, but I guess late summer. We're into the dog days of summer officially. Is that like mid-July, like the middle of the summer?
I think dog days is supposed to be August.
Oh, that's when it's like really bad.
Yeah, it's like the hottest. That's when people go craziest. But yes, they were saying that basically they could not keep up with the demand caused by COVID, and that they are working on it, and hopefully they should have things ready to go by late summer. The article on Forbes, you know, talks about how the regular Switches are still going for, you know, high 400s to high 500s, you know, and the Switch Lite is, you know, selling regularly for about 300.
Okay. No, go ahead.
No,
I just think it's interesting that it's being advertised on Twitter so much, and people are complaining, why are you advertising it? Well, you have to keep it in people's minds, not even if it's not on the shelves. And you can't, and you can get a Switch Lite pretty much anywhere right now. The Switch Lite has been readily available.
I've heard otherwise. I've heard that it has not been readily available.
Okay, here, whenever I about once a week or so, I check the Target site, and it's in local Targets near us. The Switch.
Okay.
And honestly, the Switch was back in stock at Best Buy. I think I checked like 3-4 days ago. I almost bought one for the hell of it, but I'm like, I don't know anyone who wants one. So I could have bought on Best Buy. Then 20 minutes later, I went back. It was out of stock. So it went probably within like a half hour of it being back in stock. And it was in stock at the Santee Target. It was in stock, the gray one.
Oh, really?
But not anymore, probably, but it was. So they're getting back out there with it. And yeah, you want to advertise, obviously, products to make sure they stay in people's heads. That's the whole
point. Well, yeah, if you wanted one at one point, they got to make that you didn't buy it if it was out of stock. Yeah, they got to make sure that you keep remembering that you want one.
Sure, like a certain NES guidebook. I got to remind you every other week about that. Oh, by the way, with that, thanks for I did a 10% off sale over the weekend for 4th of July. Thanks everyone who purchased a book or two or pins. We sold some pins.
Yeah,
for 10% off, and yeah, I got to do sales like that every so often. There. I thought about buying it off Best Buy, because at least you would have got the longer battery life, right? And then sold my old one, but I'm like, it's not worth the hassle. Would have been, I could have done. I was like, plus they were the gray ones for sale too, and I could have been cheap and switched out the Joy-Cons and then sold the gray Joy-Cons with my old console. I could have done that. No one would have known. You would have gotten new, better Joy-Cons without a potential of drift, probably, right?
Sure. I mean, you could have been a weirdo about it if you wanted to.
Yeah, what, there's no weirdos when it comes to gaming. What are you talking about? None of us at all are weirdos when it comes to that. Speaking of weirdos, The Last of Us 2 voice actress addressed some death threats she got. And I mean, I don't have a huge amount to say. It's just, I mean, it's fucking people. Come on. She's an actress hired to voice a role, and she has no say on the story or how the game is made or the creative decisions. She's getting a paycheck. She's coming into a booth for like a week or so, and she's doing her lines. Like, come on. Are people?
Yeah, but she's a woman with muscles, Pat. Those don't exist. They're obviously just make-believe. You know, that's not a thing. It's ridiculous. We've gone for so long without having any opinion on The Last of Us 2, and I was really hoping we'd fucking make it out of this without ever having to have an opinion on The Last of Us 2, and I still don't. I just think that people need to fucking calm the hell down. Things can sometimes be disappointing. Maybe you were disappointed in it. Maybe you loved it. But sending death threats to the voice actress isn't going to fucking solve anything. It just makes you look like a big goddamn baby.
What? There's babies out there? Really?
Yes. Yes. And they should sometimes sit down and shut the fuck up.
They should sit down and shut the fuck up. That's right. Not threaten people.
Yeah. Don't threaten people because you're angry about your video game. It's dumb.
Well, they're angry about their own lives, but it comes out in a video game. The same way, like, it's like you hate your own life, so I'm going to try to find something to be angry about, like people telling me that, well, maybe you should wear a mask and be respectful. And so I'm going to use that as a tool of my anger. I mean, that's what most of these people are doing. Come on. If you're happy with your own life and content, you don't find things to get angry about. Like, you just don't. This is psychology 101. You don't need a doctorate in order to figure these things out.
Sure.
You know, but that's a whole other issue about angry. A lot of times just angry young men and why we have so many angry young men. That's a whole other conversation that I don't want to get into. That can go into lots of different directions. So obviously people have rallied around her, including toxic YouTubers that created the environment in order to create people like this.
Isn't that something special?
Isn't that something special? You have toxic pieces of shit, maybe a one who's gone after us multiple times in the past, that make their living off of creating divisive and videos that harass people. And then now you're trying to play defensive because now the YouTube environment is potentially changing and that stuff's not being tolerated as much anymore.
Maybe their days are numbered.
Well, what are you going to do? Karma sucks, right?
Yeah. So
how about that Street Fighter 2 proto being dumped? The Genesis, you look at that. It's a Hidden Palace had the news come out, an earlier version of Street Fighter 2 that I guess that was being done by not being done by Capcom, and they weren't satisfied, so they had it redone. I don't have a huge amount about to say about this, but I love the fact that this stuff is coming out like now. It's coming out in droves. All these stories. We shame the proto hoarders. Maybe I don't know. Or now that the environment's more where people realize, hey, I may actually come out with this stuff before it rots away in a fucking shoebox somewhere in the attic. You know.
So this is, you know, Street Fighter 2 Dash Championship Edition. This looks to be closer to, I would say, probably the PC Engine version that actually did come out than maybe the one that ended up being released. But it's nice to see it. I just, you know, at this point, I don't always have something to say about it. It's, you know, it's Street Fighter 2. Yeah. But I'm happy that it's out. I'm happy that it got there, and I definitely don't want people hoarding it. But yeah, I don't know. Street Fighter 2. We've seen a lot of Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. The most interesting part about this was that it was turned out this is related to, I guess, what they thought was a bootleg ROM version, or it was a bootleg game version in the mid-90s that came out. And they was like, where did this version come from? Well, it was someone took this version and put it on, a cart back in like the mid-90s or what have you. At least that's gotcha. It showed up on a BBS board at first in like 94, it looked like. I think that's what happened. This is a long story, and I try to keep up with it. There's a lot of historical ins and outs to this story.
I was going
to
say a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of facets. But
basically, within like six, and this is why, the game was delayed. This is why it came out after the Super Nintendo one. It turns out. But this helped open the door because with Capcom's relationship with Sega, because Capcom was pretty much a straight up still third party partner with Nintendo up to this point in time. So this sort of opened the door with Capcom putting more stuff on the Genesis. That's what at least the article sort of says. So it's interesting. Check it out at hiddenpalace.org, your source for hidden game information, I guess. I don't know there. And then you want to talk about Shenandoah?
No, I told you we were going to talk about that next week because I'm going to play it.
Okay. All right. Don't pull the curtain back. Entirely.
Well, I deleted it. We said we weren't gonna.
I didn't notice you deleted it on the agenda until now. I didn't see it. Sorry.
The agenda.
It's an agenda.
No, but we can move on. Sure, we're gonna talk about it now because it's just weird. I'll try it. So I'm gonna try it for next week. But a game came out on the Switch as of today, I believe, called Shenandoah 93.
Great. You deleted the link. Now I can't look about what the hell you're talking about.
I told that, you we weren't gonna
That's talk. Such an Ian move. Okay, yes. Pat, I'll talk about it, but I don't have the link to access it.
I deleted it in an attempt to keep you from bringing it up. You brought it up, and now it's just awkward. So Google it. It was being made in 92, I believe, on the Amiga. And, you know, whatever youthful group of young friends were making.
Now when I search Shenandoah Switch, it comes up Shenandoah Switchgrass, the species. I can't find this. Where is this being released on?
Type Shenandoah 93.
Okay. Go for it.
Anyway, they apparently, the development team, you know, blew apart. I'm assuming they were probably teenagers. And someone decided to finish it now. They took all the original graphics and sound effects, everything that was originally on the Amiga, and just transferred it into, something that they could finish the game in today, and are putting it on a system that people can actually play. So it's going to be on the Switch, and I will be trying it today. I think that's an interesting story.
Is it spelled Shenandoah, like Shenandoah? Is that, or is it a different spelling? Because I cannot find it now, Ian. And now I got to and now I got to find the video.
Doa.
Put it in the video over your face.
To teach
you, I'm going to put it over your face to teach you a lesson over their hologram image.
Maybe just pay attention. I typed in Shenandoah 93 Switch, and it's the first damn thing
it wasn't
that popped
for me.
Up, Patrick.
I put in Shenandoah 93, and it went back to the university.
Shenandoah 93 Switch. 1993 Shenandoah for Nintendo Switch. Boom. Here it is. Anyway.
Oh, there it is. Oh, Nintendo.com. Okay. Or NintendoEverything.com.
Yes.
Towards
the end of the Interstellar Wars, chaos spread, and one band of elite mercenaries acted more like pirates and looters than actual soldiers. The leader of this group was the notorious and infamous Colonel Nestor. So there you go.
Oh, Colonel Nestor. That's nice. I like that. I like that a lot. Can we get to the intergalactic wars? I feel like that'd be more interesting than what we're going through right now, slowly being torn apart. Can we just get to a thing like that? Can we get to the Dominion War? Can we just do it? I'd rather serve in Starfleet or do something like that. Oh, I finished Deep Space Nine. And the seventh season wasn't as bad as I remember. I remember there was a tail off, but not as bad as the Next Generation tail offs in the sixth and seventh seasons. It was still obviously really good. The last episode still is hokey because I read they ran out of money for the budget, and that last fight between Gold Dukat and Sisko was awful. With the effects, and they jump into the fire, spoilers, it's really bad, but still a good satisfying ending to Deep Space Nine. Now I miss it because now it's like your friends are gone. That's how nice those characters were. Sorry.
Yeah, it's easy to get addicted to shows like that, even if they're not that great. If you buy into something and you watch it to the end, there's an attachment. Vani and I are finally finishing Game of Thrones. We have three episodes left, I think. And the last season is fucking awful. But, you know, you get attached to the characters. So it's kind of it's going to be sad to see him go anyways.
J.R.R. Martin still hasn't finished the book for the last year. So he can, change it around. He's in a cabin somewhere in seclusion trying which is, the worst procrastination.
George R. Martin. J.R.R. Martin. You're mixing Tolkien and Martin together.
Hey, he might have taken some ideas, so I'm mixing them together. So good old George. You know, it's a lovely fellow from what I hear. People that personally know him. I know a couple people that have interacted with him. He's basically forced himself to finish the book because it's the worst case of entertainment procrastination ever. He's years behind finishing this book.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I feel like it kind of backfires on him eventually too, because the book isn't finished. Everyone was into this thing that was based on his book. Everyone hated the way the TV show.
Because it wasn't the book done for that last season. Right. So
for the last three seasons.
Oh, yeah. So is he going to did he give him a story outline at least, or did they do their own thing?
Well, from what I understand, he gave him a story outline, but all I'm getting at is he needs to finish it because if he doesn't want people to think about his novel series in a negative light, he needs to finish it and provide, you know, his ending that people can either agree with or disagree with.
But how far is he allowed to go away from what the TV show did now? I wonder how far allowed he could probably, he'll fill in the gaps and, oh, why did evil dragon lady turn out to be homicidal and whatever? Well, she was, but maybe we didn't explain it well enough. He can fill in the gaps.
See, that's one thing, and I haven't gotten to that part yet, but I know that that's coming, and it's just like, I don't know, maybe it's because I had inklings of it, you know, early on from what people had been saying, but it's pretty obvious that she's got a fucking mean streak and she could turn it at any given time.
Well, there you go.
I mean, to me, that's not the problem. And I, like I said, I haven't seen that yet, but that's not the problem with the final season. The problem with the final season is Vaughn and I watched like a 2-hour long episode that was an hour and a half of shitty fucking blurry fight sequences. And all these people are like, if only it had two more episodes. And I'm like, they didn't fucking do anything with the episodes.
They just
it was an hour and a half of bullshit. And I just like laughed.
They just meandered around.
Yeah, it's just like fighting and killing, and it's like they're not doing anything with this shit. So I think they just ran out of fucking ideas.
So this is a press release that I don't think anyone's talked about yet. It's interesting. So Collector Vision had put out the FPGA ColecoVision console, the Phoenix. We talked about it. The Kickstarter tried to happen a couple years ago. It fell short, but they still sold it, and people have this. It's like $200, right? About,
yeah, and they put it out, it started releasing middle of 2019, I think, so like last summer.
Yeah, and we at the same time, it's a cool idea. I saw it's an FPGA ColecoVision with a cartridge slot and, you know, everything. So if you like ColecoVision, you want to get this version. Yeah.
This is exactly the sort of thing that I like look at and I go, this is like, you don't need a new system. We don't need an Amico. We don't need an Atari box. We don't need any of that. If you want to make a new system because you like old stuff, just make like the kick-ass version of what you play.
Sure.
We've got the, you know, the AVS that does it for Nintendo, and we've got the ColecoVision Phoenix for ColecoVision. And that is something that, you know, it didn't hit its, we talked about it when it was in its Kickstarter. There wasn't a wide market base for it,
no.
But there was a market base for it, and they scaled. It seemed like they were scaling appropriately, and they realized that this wasn't something that was going to sell like fucking gangbusters.
No. I mean, anything pre-NES is rough when it comes to the marketplace. When sure. It comes to older Atari stuff, obviously ColecoVision and Television somewhere in there, Odyssey 2, there's just no one that, for the most part, is following the stuff anymore. That's not controversial. You can hear CEOs potentially try to mix things and straight out lie. Like, I don't know, maybe a CEO once said something like they sold more in Television flashbacks than NES Classic Editions, which is total fabrication and outright lie based upon nothing. Maybe someone said that at one point. I don't know.
Oh, please. I mean, take a freaking joke, people. Like, but, seriously, take a joke.
Thanks. But anyway, so this press release is them, is the team's, at ColecoVision, which includes our pal John Lester, Games31, they are teaming with Coleco Holdings, the trademark company, to, I guess, get that ColecoVision branding and logo on the system. This is what I'm going to say. I understand it from a business perspective. You want to, you know, you want to make it seem quote unquote more legitimate and having that branding on there. I hope this is a good deal for the folks at ColecoVision, because this isn't the type of a deal where this is going to blow up and then people are going to realize this exists. Like, people, if you wanted to learn about this before, you would already knew this console existed. Like, if you were that into the homebrew scene or wanting to do it, you knew about this console. Getting the branding, I think, for most people won't, you know, there's no people that are going to be on the edge, be like, oh, do I want to get it? I don't know. Oh, it has the branding. Oh, now I'll get it. So maybe there's a few people, but, I don't know. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's just
the two comments are interesting, honestly, on this article.
It's from actionfigureinsider.com is the only article I found.
Right. But
what's his name that runs Coleco Holdings? Chris, whatever his name is that I met.
Chris Cardillo.
Yeah, he's a big G.I. Joe collector. So maybe that's how he got the article at Action Figure Insider. Anyway, go on.
If this is true, I will have nothing more to do with ColecoVision. The new Coleco is a sham company that has pissed a lot of ColecoVision enthusiasts off the past years. ColecoVision must have a short memory. I don't know anything about it, but we do.
A lot of the shenanigans happened even – this is after the Coleco Chameleon stuff. A lot of the shenanigans happened when you were on the show, and I reported about them trying to strong-arm Facebook groups.
That's right. I remember that, Facebook groups that had...
They were called ColecoVision.
Yeah, that and that they all any they were also being dickish to homebrewers that had the ColecoVision logo on their boxes, if I remember correctly, which is fucking stupid.
Well, they were trying to claim that you can't. They were trying to like twist it. Well, you got to, you know, pay us because you're doing a ColecoVision homebrew. Like, no, you don't have to. No, they weren't even using the logo, I think, on some of them. It was just like, no, we're doing ColecoVision games. We don't need your permission. You don't own the copyright or a patent. You own the trademark. Trademark is for a word or a symbol. If we're not using your ColecoVision rainbow thing.
That last name is familiar. Did that dude come after us at one point in
time? I'm sure he did.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sure he did. I think he says, like, well, I try to get you a deal at Barnes & Noble for your book. And I'm like, because you gave me a business card? Like, I got to, like, kiss your ass? That was in Connecticut.
Anyways, this second comment, I think it shines a little light on it. ColecoVision is saying in the forums that there is not a partnership. ColecoCardio is buying some units from the next batch due in October for them.
Oh.
So this could definitely be an article where
someone
is trying to make it a lot bigger sounding than it is. And really it's, I'm going to buy some units and put my sticker on them.
Wait a second. ActionFigureInsider.com? Did you not do your due diligence on this article, Daniel Pickett?
I mean, it's not like we are. I mean, I haven't looked further than the comments section. But knowing how this stuff goes, this does seem likely to me that they would try to call the partnership when really it's like, I'm going to buy some and put my name on them, okay?
Wait a second then. Then whatever I said was true. Then, yeah, ColecoVision's like, we don't need a partner.
Exactly. Why would they need a partner? Yeah, someone just wants to put the ColecoVision logo on some of them.
Here's the quote I love. Hindsight is 20/20. That is why we have been incredibly careful when reaching out to partner companies. Whoops. We made a mistake with that Coleco chameleon thing. Whoops. Partnering with ColecoVision and using their Phoenix technology as a leap forward of many years. Okay. This allows Coleco to return to the world of consoles with a compatible console quickly. Yeah, because you're not making your own console. We see how that works out with other companies here and with yourself. Much faster than developing another compatible console would require, stated Chris Cardillo, Coleco partner. No, he's the guy running the holding company for the trademark.
Yeah. Much faster than developing. Yet no one's gonna.
Oh my god,
I wasn't expecting this to like give me anything to work with, but I'm just amazed at how these people need to sound like make stuff like this sound important. I'm buying some pre-existing consoles and I'm going to put my name on them. This is huge.
If the comment's true, we didn't do our journalistic, get on our journalism hats and try to reach ColecoVision for comment on that. But if you believe the comments here in this article, wow, okay. We'll see if this turns into something bigger. I almost said to myself, after they came out with, I guess, the relatively successful Coleco tabletops that did those came out. It's like, wow, what does Coleco Holdings have up their sleeves now out in good old New Jersey? What are the
stickers on an existing product?
If that's what it's going to be, I guess that's what we're looking at here. Okay. So ColecoVision, I guess, was smart and not partnering with Coleco here.
I'd like to think that the folks at ColecoVision definitely learned.
Yeah. Well, no, they know that there's no potential.
The value
of putting on that old rainbow trademark. It's not going to. You're not going to sell 10,000 units because of people seeing that rainbow logo. Look at that convention we never talked about that happened in good old my backyard in Edison, New Jersey a couple years ago, that good old Coleco Expo. That did very well for them at the time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that thing was weird.
With tens of people in attendance in Edison, New Jersey there. Speaking of old trademarks and old licenses and old video game consoles that nary a person cares about. Is that a term, nary? I'll redo that. I don't know.
Nary is a term.
Okay. Well, speaking of old outdated video game properties, the Intellivision Amiga, we just have a quick update. I wish I had my Robert Stack button for update. So Tommy responded to us talking about the quizzical job listings of them needing firmware people and people to help make the system run and to boot it up and to make
you know, splash pages and set up the servers and things like that.
It's all, well, we were wrong. It's all for,
it's all for accessories that they'll be working on for 2021 and 2022, according to Tommy Tallarico.
Questions answered.
Yeah, because when I'm struggling to get a game console, what I want to do, Ian, is worried about my accessory. I'm going to be coming on the market in 2 years. That's what I want to do when I'm way behind and I've already taken $1.5 million of people's money and $500,000 from, again, the German government, which no one is talking about and these interviewers don't bring up at all, which I think is a pretty fair point to bring up when you have four of your you know, packing games being developed through German grant money, through taxpayer dollars, and how that's going to work and how that's structured. Anyway, though, I digress. So, you know, this is what I'm going to say to Tommy. And Tommy claims now that, you know, because you said, well, have we seen a working console? So, of course, he tried to pick the one little thing to get you, Ian. Don't say there's no physical media, Ian. Don't you say that. So you said, we haven't seen a working console. So Tommy's argument is, well, we put out two videos at the end of March, which is when they started and were doing their first, you know, pre-order campaign. I guess the Founders Edition, whatever it was, the wood grain was, one was. They put out their Sideswipers little car track video, single screen racing destruction derby game sort of thing. And they did a video for the new Missile Command. So in those videos, the people are playing on the couch and you are like 9 feet away from the TV. There is something that looks like a white Amico console laid out on the table in front. But there's no way to know if that's actually playing the games. There's no way you can see if it's connected to the TV. And there's two laptops in that video. There's one on the right side, which I think is doing video capture. There's one on the left side. There's a blue board in the picture. There's all this stuff going on.
Yeah, behind the
TV. There's like this
the casing.
Yeah. There's all this stuff going on here. So Tommy's saying, well, that's evidence that we had a working console there. Even if you give him the benefit of the doubt, which I don't think Tommy has earned at all due to his straight up, you know, fabrications and lies in the past. He has not earned the benefit of the doubt, at least to me. And to Ian, would you agree he is not at this
point? No, I would not give him the benefit of the doubt.
You know, going back to things like, oh, we're going to do 2D games on our console better than the PS4 and modern consoles do. Remember that shit from 2 years ago that no one talks about? Yes. Like these outlandish claims.
Yeah, this board is going to do more. Yeah.
This $15 Android board will do better games than $400 consoles. Anyway, so even if that console was somehow running those games, that's not my definition of a working console. A working console to me is something close to retail and consumer ready. And I want to splice that here because there's no, when we see those videos, we don't see the game boot up. We don't see the game being loaded. We don't see the console powered up. We don't see the LED lights around the console. We don't see the controllers being synced to the console. We don't see anything. So, again, I don't know if we can give him the benefit of the doubt to that anyway. And if Tommy wanted to shut us up in the past week, all he had to do, Ian, was, hey, Pat, here's a console. I'm hooking up HDMI to the TV. Here's the power button. It's on. There's a splash screen. I'm going to click the menu, and I'm going to load up the game and play it. That's all you'd have to have done.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't even if you did that, though, there's no guarantee that means it's ready for production. But at least you could have shut me and Ian up. So that's all I'm going to say about that. At this point, you know, it's getting ridiculous. There is a nice theory at my favorite website, AmicoGames.com, your source for Intellivision Amico information. There was a comment about surmising because who's your new favorite YouTuber, Ian, that wanted to be on the show with us?
The madman. The madman.
Mad movie man? What was his?
I don't know, but he came out, he left a comment yesterday saying that he wanted to know if we were ready to talk to the madman. No, I'm not.
Okay, so it's I don't want to punch down on some of these YouTubers, but to me it's funny. He's a YouTuber. He wears a Dr. Doom mask. He interviewed Tommy here. There was this comment though that left had a good theory about what's going on with the Amico. This is just a comment. We'll leave it up to you whether or not you agree with it. Here's what I got. This is from a commenter named ST. Intellivision knows that this won't sell as much as Tommy had originally hoped. To break even at this new price point, they only need to sell 180,000 Amicos, which is their internal numbers, they reported, which is a number their research indicates is obtainable.
They know the majority of families looking for this type of experience will buy a Switch for the extra cost instead. So they hiked the price up to $250 to $300 for pre-orders and the initial run from the planned $199 MSRP. After the pre-orders and the initial batch gets sold to the retro gamer market that Tommy is exploiting, they will lower the price back down to $199 and aim their marketing to parents of young kids, families at the mall, hospitals, retirement homes, elementary schools, etc. The reason Tommy doesn't show an actual console isn't because he is poor. It's because he's not fronting the bill for most of what is spent buying television entertainment. The funds come from private investors, your pre-orders, grants from foreign governments, etc. That's the reason for the extensive market research. It's to appease investors who need to see data before moving forward on spending. Tommy is just the face, the snake oil salesman, the con man. The truth is they need every bit of that pre-order money because the majority of their early work went into showing something viable for investors to get on board, not building an actual system. Make no mistake, this thing is barely being pieced together. They are way behind schedule now and definitely do not have a completed game system anywhere close to ready for launch, which is what we said last week. Tommy is lying about that because it is his job to string along the retro gamers who will pay an inflated price. Long term, Tommy doesn't know what the Amiga will be because it's not him who makes those decisions, it's his investors. That's not a totally unreasonable take.
That after the money comes in, you know, he basically had to give up.
Oh yeah, because when you get, the more investors you get, the less control of your company and product you have. I mean, that's just how it works. And some might come in and say, listen, I'm going to give you $10 million. I'm going to have say about what the hell's going on. Either take my money and my direction. It's like Shark Tank, right? Some of them said, well, I want control of your company or else I'm not going to be involved. I'll give you the money, but I want control of the company.
You know, sure.
That happens sometimes here. Anyway, so yeah, last thing I'm going to say is this. Since I'm not giving this person the benefit of doubt, I think it's highly likely that back when these pre-orders went on sale in March, and then now with the GameStop pre-orders, which are still listing, I believe, still listing October 10th. Yeah, they're still listing October 10th on GameStop's website, a main gaming website. I think by March, you would have an idea if 6 months from now we can ship our product.
Well, that's what I was saying back then. I mean, we're talking fairly tight timelines, but I have a feeling that, you know, it was fairly well known as we got into February, March here that it
you would was know not going- whether or not you're yes. on track, right?
Yeah, it's a big operation. It's not like you can just fucking switch it on, you know, the next day and be like, okay, we're good. Saved by the bell.
So I'm going to say this. To me, it'd be highly unethical to take this much money from backers and in deposit money, $1.5 million, knowing likely that this is not going to come out in October and probably won't be out this year. Are people going to tag me for saying that? Like, that's... You have to hold us to the same standard as any other product or any other past console that came and went. You don't hold this product to a different standard because the quote unquote face of the product is doing interviews with all these YouTubers.
Yeah. It just seems very desperate.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what their big announcement is in July. They're supposed to have a big announcement here. All right. Ian, lots of bad news, tumultuous couple of weeks for the fighting game community and the Smash Brothers community.
Jesus Christ, it's been a bad couple of weeks just in general in terms of online communities and with video games when it comes to sexual assault. A couple of weeks ago I mentioned the allegations that were brought up against numerous people at Ubisoft. I think there was at least three. And then there was problems in the Pokemon community with it. And now, I mean, it's like every other day something is blowing up. So the big ones that happened, you know, this past week were the cancellation of Evo, probably the biggest fighting game tournament out there, because Joey Kular, Mr. Wizard.
Former CEO.
Was faced with credible allegations of, Jesus Christ, fucking around with small boys. So that's great.
So then, the companies, they don't like the fighting games. Companies said we're not going to have our games there.
Immediately,
which is good. They're like, this is ridiculous.
Yes, it is good. Yeah, we can't. And it's like I said, it's worth mentioning that this has been a larger problem the past couple of months outside of just fighting games, because these companies are reacting swiftly and quickly. Now there's no ifs, ands, or buts. So EVO was saddled with problems earlier this year because of COVID. They had to move online, and then with these allegations, all these companies were like, nope, pulled it out. And EVO's not happening this year. I honestly don't know what's going to happen with the future of EVO. I guess if I had an opinion, it would probably be best for it to rebrand and move forward as something else if it can.
Well, it's a big company, obviously. I mean, I guess they could.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a gap. I mean, this is a gap year anyway with everything with going on with COVID. So maybe they just try to say, okay, well, next year we'll come back and we'll obviously try to do better. I mean, it's a CEO of a company doing heinous things with children.
It's awful. And I don't really even want to get into the actual allegations because it's fucking gross.
But it's from all credible sources, this seems like likely this stuff happened.
And then Smash Brothers, the Smash Brothers community is just
burned to the ground.
Holy shit. I mean, so the amount of sexual allegations and non-sexual allegations brought against various members of the Smash Brothers community is humongous. There is a Reddit page dedicated to detailing this currently, and it's a goddamn spreadsheet. And there are, I can't even begin to give you a rough estimate of how
dozens.
Many people.
It's like 100.
It's dozens, yes. And it's the alleged offender. Then there is a column with links to the claims and then links to, these statements from the offenders if they replied. Mm-hmm. And it just looks like it was a fucking shit show with no adults in the room and everyone just acting fucking gross.
Well, some of the adults are the ones doing some of this heinous stuff. I mean,
well, yes, I'm sorry. I've got to be more careful with what I'm saying. I mean the proverbial adult in the room.
Yes. Yes. You have an environment, you have a game that a lot of kids, preteens, teens are fans of, young adults, and no one stepping in and saying, well, maybe we should make sure bad shit doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Not that you always want to think this stuff won't happen, but you have to expect the worst when you have a lot of people that come together, especially younger people that maybe they're not used to social interaction, or maybe, you know, some of these people use this environment just for predatory action. Some people join these communities. We heard about it, I think, in Minecraft years back, that there's a lot of bad people that got in there just to prey on kids. You know, like, you hear about this stuff. It's unfortunate, but there are sickos out there. There are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of these hobbies are so popular because they appeal to such a wide range of people in terms of ages and demographics and things like that. But yeah, you have to be careful of predators infiltrating it. Those are
danger.
Those are ripe grounds for fucking, very bad things to happen.
Yeah,
if people aren't paying attention.
Yeah, you have a mixture of 12-year-olds talking to 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds, people in their 20s, and then, like, I'm seeing videos. There was the only one I'll reference directly is the one that came to my attention was the Sin Pai one, the allegations, and you literally see her with the boy, the underage boy, like holding them and grab, like, it's on the video, it's on the stream of them doing the competition. You see it, it's right there. And the first thing I think about is, like, there's literally no adults in the room. Like, they're all just the people in the fighting tournament, and the average age of everyone in that room was probably like 17, 18. Like, that's probably the average age in that room. So I'm thinking, okay, now this stuff is happening where people are traveling, they're staying in hotel rooms. Now I'm going to like chaperone mode where, yeah, there's no one watching these kids at a lot of these events. Sure. So this is a, obviously you don't ever blame the victim when it comes to these things. You have to, but you have to hold accountable some of the organizers of these events. You have to. They have to be held accountable for some of this. You have to watch what the hell's going on under your roof. You know, you have to realize this stuff can happen. And I hate to think that there had to have been people that knew some of this bad shit was happening. There's too many stories. There's too many.
Yeah, to not catch wind of something, you know, I feel like
even if half of these aren't true, these allegations, there's still a ton on this right. Reddit list. And this won't even be probably be all of them. These are just the ones that they have the past couple weeks. The other major one was I talked about with you on the phone was this Sky Williams having a house full of Smash players, and it sounded like a house of debauchery because there's allegations against like 10 different people at least right. that were at this guy's house. So what does he know what's going on? Is he paying attention? He's responsible in some part if this bad shit happens. I'm glad Nintendo is not involved officially with this shit.
Yeah, in what you say, there's a lot to it. If you're going to provide an environment for people to come together, then it's, you know, there is responsibility on your half to make sure that is a safe environment.
Yeah, and it wasn't. Nintendo actually put out a statement, but it was just like, we were aware of the stuff going on, and, you know, but obviously they have not connected to any of this directly. They don't officially sponsor this shit, these tournaments and things like that. And now you know why, because Nintendo doesn't want to be involved with this shit they can't control, or, you know, like, it's too risky. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know how something like a community like this could even move forward. I don't know. I don't know. There was tons of people doing videos, you know, big Smash community people on YouTube. And I don't know what you say. I don't know what you say. This is a systematic failure of everyone when it comes down to it. I mean, it's disgusting. That's the best thing you can say. I mean, when you literally go on Reddit and you see you can't keep track of all the allegations, and then it's like the responses from the people of the alleged offender and the claims. I mean, it's tons of fucking people. It's nauseating. Yeah. I don't want to read the stories.
No, I mean, and I did read some of them. Obviously, you know, you can't just run and hide from it. But after a certain point, you're reading this, and this might sound wrong, but you're reading so much of it, and you're just like, okay, no, I believe this 100%. This occurred, but
some of the people have admitted it. ESPN did an article on one of them. Former Smash Pro Zero, which I think we talked about last year. Admits to sending suggestive messages to minors. ESPN's running the article under their esports section, and he's one of the biggest players.
Yeah. A lot of it's not just allegations. A lot of it is, if you go through, it looks like, you know, they admit it after the fact. You know, that's the thing. Like, you can't even just say it's just because a lot of people do. A lot of people like to be like, oh, it's just allegations. It's like, no, they're admitting to it.
Sure. Or at least admitting something happened, but legally, I don't want to admit everything.
Right.
And I get, you know, then I open myself up to, you know, legal prosecution.
Yeah, like, here's one. Like, I mean, I'm scrolling down and it's just like, no story, just a confession. Okay.
Yeah. Burn it to the ground. That's what, like, with the Evo thing, it's obviously the guy at the head, but this is like these are like big players, and these are people that are in the community. The community is the foundation's rotten.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know why this would be more rotten than the other ones. Maybe because it's Nintendo and it's more of a kiddie game. I have no idea. But this is the big, out of all the fighting game stuff, this is the biggest one that we've seen was a Smash Brothers community. It's just fucking disgusting.
Well, and I mean, I don't pay too much attention to it, but it seems like the Smash Brothers community, at least I know, you know, the few people I know that have played, you know, are constantly trying to fight against the image that the Smash Brothers community is toxic.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I hate to, you know, be the person who just says it is, but that was always my impression of it. And everyone I talked to is always like, no, yeah, it's as bad as it sounds.
No, we did stories about how toxic they were against competitors against each other, and how their cliques and shaming people, you know, and jealousy. But this is way beyond professional jealousy. This is criminal behavior. This is ruining people's lives. Yeah. It's horrible. I mean, I don't want to, say I'm just glad Nintendo is not officially involved with any of this fucking shit. That you can't put it back on them at all. They stay away from this. They put out their little saying, yeah, we condemn these actions of these people, which they shouldn't. That's about it.
You know, I feel bad for the victims, and I hope they get, you know, any help that they need. You know, and that goes for any, accusation of sexual harassment that's been, going around lately. But, you know, the Smash Brothers, and especially seeing how young some of these kids were, it's like, they're going to need some help, I think, to get past a lot of this.
Sure. All right. Moving on. All right, Ian, the Atari VCS has what we think is a release date set for their upcoming consoles.
Except, I mean, there's two, which is the funny thing. They can't really get a straight line on this. So Walmart is saying that the shipping date for the Atari VCS is November 27th, with Atari themselves saying that the launch date is December 14th.
Okay, so within a few weeks of, that's like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Within, okay. General ballpark, we'll say early December to mid-December. Well, sure. Walmart can say to Atari, they can say, we want these first. They feel like if you want us to carry this on our website or in our stores, I don't know if they're going to be in the stores, but we want the products first. We want the first whatever one's off the line, or else you don't have a deal with us. They have that muscle to do that, obviously. Right. GameStop gets whatever GameStop gets. I don't think GameStop has the muscle to at this point for any of this crap. So this is the good news when it comes to Atari. They have a console. We've seen it produced. We've seen it booted up and playing games. We've seen it with their menu. You can go on YouTube, Netflix with it. You can go on the AntStream service with it. As much as we gave them shit, there's something on the horizon that we see right now with the Atari VCS.
I don't know that we should even give them that much credit, though. I mean, that's the point we're at with these. Oh boy, it actually exists.
Oh boy,
still a bad idea.
Sure.
It's still, I'm not going to give it any credit. I don't care that it released.
Well, they've taken people's money, and hopefully the people are going to get a product that they paid for.
$399 is what the, and this actually did, talks a little bit about the two models that they've put out. So the Atari VCS 800, nice way to mix your fucking console and
computer.
Stupid sounding. It's available for $399, and then they're going to put out an Atari VCS 400 that has half as much RAM, and that is going to be
$300.
I don't know how much that one is going to be. There was a price point on one of these articles, but I think it was like $299
$250
or $350.
$250. Okay. So for $150 more, you get more RAM. Is that really $150 for 4 more gigs of RAM? Jesus Christ! Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
you have all the specs at least. We know exactly what the hell's in this thing.
Sure. Read it off.
Okay. Best I can. 3 pounds. It's got the plastic, metal, and wood material, Ian. Operating system, Atari Custom Linux OS. The APU, AMD Raven Ridge 2. The GPU is Ryzen, which I switched over to. Remember last year, I think we spoke about it. They were switching it's a more powerful CPU. Because now it's like you're buying a computer. Storage, a 32 gig. MMC internal, that's the same thing you see on computers or a little slot for storage. RAM, 8 gigabyte DDR4 RAM, upgradable. Great. You want to open up your console? What's computer? Blah, 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 blah. Wireless connection, Wi-Fi, 4 USB 3.1s, gigabit Ethernet connection, HDMI 2.0, blah, blah, external inputs, but whatever.
Yeah.
Internet connection is required, not for classic gaming, but required to access all features. So the built-in games, you can just fire up and play them. Whatever the 100+ built-in Atari games, but yeah, if you want to get on AntStream or use it as, you're basically using this as a smart TV device as well, and going on Hulu and Netflix and Disney Plus with it. So $250 or $400, those are your two choices. I guess if you wanted to use this, Ian, as a total computer, you'd want to go for the 8 gig version. But if this is upgradable, I would buy the 4 gig and just rip it out and just not waste $150 and just buy my own RAM and put in, right?
Yeah, $150 is very expensive for 4 gigabytes of RAM as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
I'm not like a huge computer person, but that seems...
That seems like a lot.
Seems wild, yeah.
Let's so put that just... money towards buying that RAM and getting more out of it. So we saw that pictures of the first units on a pallet. They opened the box up. They show the unit there. I'm going to give Atari the benefit of the doubt. Those were real produced consoles on that pallet. I don't think they faked that. Those were real consoles on that pallet. All evidence points to them actually having produced that. I'm not trying to be glib. They had the factory things. They showed us all that stuff. They produced it.
Cool.
They didn't produce all of them. They produced some of them. They produced the first whatever they 500 to get to all the people that needed them for their, you know, all the developers they have waiting for all their stuff. Ian's yawning. He's done with the topic already.
The Atari VCS is just it's a bit much. I can't pretend like they did. I mean, it's whatever. It came out. And these fucking consoles, I'm sick of them. I'm sick of
the didn't come out yet.
Sick of the Atari VCS. I'm sick of people asking about the fucking Polymega. I don't know anything about the Polymega, but apparently Polymega quietly delayed their base unit another couple of months. Whatever.
Good news, Ian. GameStop doesn't have a release date on its site, which it still does for the Amico, by the way, which is not going to be...
Because it's coming out on the 10th, buddy. October 10th. It's almost here.
But GameStop is offering you a $10 discount for pre-orders. So instead of $390, Ian, it's $380 right now at GameStop.
Oh, that's great.
There you go. There's your CU podcast deal of the day. Get that Atari. Hey, but you know what? If people get this and it's a computer that works, they're going to fool around with it. They'll have a cool little Atari thing. Hey, I won't judge you if you get your product and you like it. I won't judge you too harshly on this. If you actually get your fucking product at some point in time, you know, you have a console. We've seen it powered up and played. From boot, unlike the Amico. So, you know, we've seen it, Ian. They didn't fake it. They did some CG trickery.
I don't care if they faked it or not. I mean, it exists. It's just, it's still bullshit. I don't care. Coming out does not mean I'm going to be like,
our bars are so low now for these products. Hey, can it come out?
what you said you were going to do. Great.
Yes. Wonderful. 2 years behind schedule or a year and a half behind schedule. All right. Ian, you want to talk about the Sega Astro Mini Arcade?
Yes, I do. Because I actually think it's very, very cool.
Very cool.
So Sega, you know, we've been talking about Sega a bit lately. We were talking about how they hadn't done anything stupid in a while. And then they went and they released the...
It's been a while.
That's awful. They went and released the Game Gear Micro, which I think all of us really questioned, you know, what the point was. Some people came back at us and said, okay, in Japan, you know, this is likely going to be a Japan only thing. And in Japan, they have an obsession with very tiny things right now. There's a
micro fetish in Japan we didn't know about.
There's a trend going on right now. So, you know, maybe it will sell over there, but still, for the amount of money that they're saying it's going to cost, it was a bad product. It was just dumb. 4 ROMs on 4 different colors, one of them being an RPG-focused unit on a 1.5-inch screen.
That costs you like $50.
Yeah. But Sega announced yesterday that they are releasing a... Astro City Mini. So the Astro City is what is essentially Sega's, what's, you know, generally referred to as a candy cab. It's a kind of a generic arcade cabinet that people swap boards in and out of. They usually have like a, you know, a 6 button setup and a joystick, and they're usually sit down, not always. And they're releasing one, and so this is actually, to me, kind of cool. So some of the games that have been announced so far: Alien Syndrome, Alien Storm, Golden Axe, Golden Axe: The Revenge of Death Adder, Columns 2, Dark Edge, Virtua Fighter, Fantasy Zone, and Altered Beast. What people are saying is that these are actually going to be the arcade ports the arcade ROMs.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. Definitely, you know, something a little different than the usual Sega Genesis. the Sega Genesis like ROM collections or something that you would get on the Switch or the PlayStation 4. This is kind of neat because you don't often see big collections of like the arcade ROMs. Something that was announced about this that is particularly interesting to me is that it was stated that it's going to be made from, you know, the same materials that the actual micro City or Astro City Minis were made from, and the joystick is actually going to be a micro switched joystick.
Yay! Because that was the problem with the Neo Geo.
Yes, holy shit! The Neo Geo Mini, from everything I heard, holy was
shit.
The joystick was just mushy. An analog stick. Yeah, it was a mushy. It was literally an analog stick that they were treating as a digital stick.
God,
this is going to be an actual micro switch joystick. And that will make a huge difference when it comes to playing things like any of the fighting games and just giving it an overall better arcade feel. Anyone who's held like a Neo Geo Pocket would know that, like, just, you know, moving your thumb around on that pad as opposed to, say, you know, a D-pad or another joystick, it's going to make a difference. It's going to have HDMI out. It's going to accept
controllers,
and it's looking to be about
$120
about. There'll be 36 games. Honestly, this is probably this is very appealing to me. It's cute looking, but actually functional.
How big is the screen? Do we know how big the screen is? It probably similar to the Neo Geo Mini, like a few inches.
I would assume, but it does not say.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't say. The final paragraph here, the Astro City Mini looks like a shrunken down arcade cabinet, similar to the Neo Geo Mini. Unlike that system, though, Sega says the stick uses proper micro switches, so it should be a lot more satisfying to use. It doesn't say anything about the screen or whether it will have a built-in battery. But yeah, I think it's
you have to be able to plug this in.
Oh yeah, right, yeah. But to me, this is automatically more appealing than the Neo Geo Mini. And the thing is, the Neo Geo Mini had some great games on it, but one, you could get those games a million other ways, because SNK has monetized their MVS library, you know, more so than just about any other company I can think of in terms of games. Like, you can get collections of those games everywhere. They're available as, you know, single purchases for like $8 through the Neo Geo Arcade Archives. There's disc compilations.
Mm-hmm.
So this having, you know, Sega Arcade ROMs, if it actually does one, like I said before, that's not something you see very often, especially in an official release. And the package that's coming in is actually usable. So yeah, I think it's a pretty cool item that they've announced.
The Neo Geo, what was that? $100 the first when it first came
out? I think it was about $120. I think it came out at $120.
And now you can buy it for $50 all day long on Amazon. It actually went down, I think, around Christmas or months ago. I remember seeing it for like $30 being trying to be cleared out by some seller, had a bunch of them for $30. It was like, and I still didn't buy one. I still didn't want one because the joystick, it looks terrible on that. And the buttons just don't look crisp to me to use I do like how it has the marquee header though on the Neo Geos. I do like that. Obviously, yeah, obviously if you get a Candy Cab, you don't get that. Candy Cabs don't have that. That's part right. of it. That's where the speakers went up there, right? Usually 36 games if they're all the arcade game. If you think it's a reasonable price and it's well made, okay, $120, okay. I wouldn't be interested in one, but if it's made well, I'd love to play and see how well, you know, the joystick is with the micro switch.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't see how Neo Geo, how they came out with it without micro switches. I think that's the dumbest thing they could have done.
Yeah, especially when like that's the thing that people, you know, one of the things people remember is like how good that Neo Geo Pocket felt, you know, and even that used micro switches, and then they put out an arcade cabinet and they're like, yeah, screw it, we're not gonna do it.
I'm just glad that Sega is making sure they have the arcade games. Nothing I hate more, because now you see them in Target for $15, $20. You see them everywhere. You see the little mini arcades like that with like the NES games in them, though. Like, there's a Rolling Thunder one, for God's sake, that I won't touch because it has the NES version, not the arcade version. And like the Burger Time one, there's tons of them now.
So, yes, stop advertising arcade or NES ports of games as arcade games. They're not. They're different.
No, it screws with my mind. What's that company putting those out that are at Target? Are they even $20? They're like $15.
I think it's Funko, honestly, or a division of Funko, but I could be wrong. But they were packaged just like Funko Pops.
The My Arcade series, that's what they are. Okay. They're like $20 to $30 everywhere. And they only have one game in them, too.
Yeah.
6.57 inch. Yeah. They are garbage. They have a D-pad on them, or you screw in a fucking joystick.
Like,
why do I want the arcade, an arcade looking thing with a D-pad on it? Like, that's, come on, man. What are we doing here with the products? I guess they sell, though, because they put out a ton of those. We're going off topic here, but yeah, there's your Dig Dug one there. There's a Dig Dug one. Oh no, it's a Bubble Bobble. There's a Bubble Bobble one. I mean, they look adorable in terms of that, like the art, but the actual game, forget it.
Yes, they're cute, but it's all packaging.
They're around $20 to $25. I don't know how many they have for the My Arcade. Now I'm going to look real quick. And none of them are like more than one game. That's a problem. Elevator Action, Miss Arcade, Miss Pac-Man Arcade. Yeah, there's a bunch of them here. But yeah, when I saw the Rolling Thunder one, my heart just sunk. Yeah. Now, hey, Numbskull, if you're planning on doing a Rolling Thunder, I'll return you the Galaga one you so graciously gave me and trade it in for a Rolling Thunder. If you ever do a Rolling Thunder one, holy shit, I would love that. All right, because it is Namco. Anyway, all right. Anything else to add here to this? So you're on board for this Sega Astro Mini? You might get one.
I don't know that I'll necessarily buy one, but I think that if you just compare it to, you know, the Neo Geo one, you know, both of about the same price, same amount of games, this is being done way better. Yeah, I think this is a far more interesting product and something that could actually be kind of exciting as opposed to what was a very expensive novelty that I don't think anyone was going to play.
And you said,
and if you wanted to play those Neo Geo games, I don't think anyone was actually hooking that thing up to their, you know, TV and playing.
Yes.
Because you can get them a million other ways. So it literally just becomes this object that you look at. And to me, that's kind of pointless. This is something that looks interesting, but might actually have some use to you.
That makes sense. And you said that it's made with the real materials at the same.
That's what they're saying. They're saying they're making it with the same materials that they made the actual cabs out of, the, you know, the I don't know what micro switches they're going to be using, but that
the fact that it's a micro switch.
The fact that it's a micro switch at all is a step in the right direction.
And that mushy oatmeal contacts in the joystick.
Yeah.
We don't need an Atari 5200 joystick on an arcade. We don't need that. Like that doesn't work out. Except for Ian. All right, Ian. Wow, look what's happened. We talk about game prices being static forever, and we always talk about should they be charging more for games. And look what's happening with the next generation. The indications are that the next gen PS5, new Xbox Series X that you love the name, at least the first game we know about, NBA 2K21 is going to have a recommended MSRP of $70, up from $60. And that's the first one we know about, and I guarantee you we're going to have other games follow suit after this going forward.
I think we will too, and maybe it's just my desire to try to see the good somewhere. I was initially kind of excited because this is I don't actually want to pay more, but this is something I've been saying for a long time, is that if you're going to microtransaction the shit out of a game because you can no longer sell that game for $60 and make the money back, then charge more for it. I've said this, it's like this in all sorts of different industries. Not all board games cost the same amount. Not all albums cost the same amount. You have to think about the packaging, how much is included, how much time it's taken. Very few things have, you know, a one price fits all pricing scheme. But obviously, immediately after seeing this happen, I go, oh, the first game is NBA 2K21. You know for a fact they're not going to dial down the amount of, you know, microtransactions in NBA 2K. The series is probably known more now for its microtransactions than it is for actually having a decent quality gameplay engine in it, which it does. It's just obfuscated, you know, by all this bullshit. So now it just seems, you know, I don't know, cynical. We're going to charge you $10 more for a game, and we're going to make sure that we charge you $1 billion in microtransactions if you want to progress anything. And it's kind of sad and annoying, but I mean, in
general. Well, you didn't expect them to get rid of the DLC ever.
No, no, I didn't. I'm just saying, like, that's what I would expect eventually if prices creep upwards, is that you might see people pricing the game relevant to the amount of content in it. What I'm saying is seeing that the prices are going up and then immediately seeing that it's NBA 2K21. No, I didn't expect that series to ever get rid of its DLC. And I don't expect DLC to go away. But I do think DLC kind of came about as a refusal of the video game market to adjust its prices. Now they're adjusting the prices, but we're also used to DLC that it's not going to go anywhere.
So, okay, I always love these charts for these releases. I'm looking at the 2K21 chart. So, the current generation version, you're basically going to get two different versions of this game. The current generation version is going to be available for PS4, Xbox One, PC, Stadia, and what is
it? Little Stadia.
NSW stand for?
Nintendo Switch.
Oh, Switch is getting it. Okay, I didn't know. I never saw it being done that way as short as NSW. Okay, that threw me off. Like, what the hell is NSW? Men's Warehouse?
I've never seen that either.
Okay, that instead of just Switch, it's like you might put Switch down there because you have Stadia there. Okay, so you're gonna get those. It's gonna be $60 for the regular version, and the Mamba Forever Edition with whatever extra crap you get on there is gonna be $100. Okay. The 2K21 next generation, that's coming holidays. That's later because when the console has to come out first. So you're going to get the September one is going to be the current generation, which I guess will be not as good stuff. I have no idea.
not as good
but stuff. Built for next gen says unbeatable graphic fidelity. I would argue that the PC version should keep up with the consoles, like because the PC, you can always get the latest and greatest. 2 second load speeds. If you have a solid state hard drive, you should get that on your computer as well. New gameplay features, expanded game modes. So they're going to be different gameplay features and expanded game modes on the consoles that you're not going to get on the PC version, even if the PC version will look as good. That's going to be holiday 2020. That's going to be $70 or still only 100 for the Mamba Forever. So buy more and save because the Mamba Forever edition will be the same for the next gen as the current gen. So they are making in some gameplay mode differences here as well, not just graphics. They are going to try to justify the extra value of it.
The value
of 10 extra dollars.
That's good. That's good. Good for them.
The Mamba Forever one, obviously they're going to pull on people's heartstrings, so everyone's going to buy the Mamba.
I keep
Forever
thinking you're saying Mamba Forever. Mamba Forever. Yeah. Mamba, yes.
I mean, what Laker fan's not going to buy that version of the game? I mean,
it's true.
They're going to take away your Laker status if you don't buy that version there. Yeah, we're going to be in a weird spot, especially for the next, I'd say, year. If it's going to be hard to ramp up production on the new Xboxes and the new PS5s. How many of the new games are going to have these split editions where they're going to try to split out gameplay modes for the new version? I mean, we've seen it on other, obviously, past console iterations, but if they're going to justify the $10 price hike, they're going to have to obviously have more than just, well, we got better graphics, we'll put an extra mode. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the next first-person shooters next year, you know, what differences they have between the two versions. Because
I think, you know, a great one would be to see what Call of Duty does different between generations. Because when Call of Duty leaves behind the previous generation, that's kind of when everything moves on.
Especially since we don't know what the hell these consoles are going to cost.
Yeah, no, we still have no clue.
So I don't picture adoption being fast and furious. If I just bought my Xbox, you know, One Pro or PS, I'm getting confused. PS4 Pro, Xbox.
PS4 Pro, Xbox One X.
If I just bought those within the past year, I'm not shelling out $500 to get a graphical upgrade. Most people don't have the money to do that. I'm going to hold on to my PS4 another 2-3 years, you know, until you really make it hard to stay with this. If all the exclusives are now only on the PS5, then yeah, I'm going to have to come on over.
Well, I know you play a lot of games this generation.
It's the general
a lot of PlayStation 4 games.
It's the royal me, Ian.
Okay.
Yoshi just came and picked up his PS4 with Spider-Man. Actually, no, I lost the Spider-Man, and then I found out I got to mail it to him.
You are a piece of work.
How am I a piece of work?
Piece of work. Never played that Spider-Man.
No, I didn't. Honestly, it doesn't. You know how many Spider-Man games I played out of all of them? I think I played them the most. probably the Super Nintendo era and like arcade era. Well, last time I played it was a Sega Spider-Man arcade game with you, which you never played before. So I was shocked at. And you said, oh, this game's awesome. I'm like, yeah, it is. Never came out anywhere, but it's awesome.
I play, I've played like no X-Men games and I'm a big X-Men fan. So,
well, you can't, it's harder to screw up an X-Men game because Spider-Man, it's the web. If you can't get the web slinging right, and you know, you can't have a Spider-Man game, and most of them fuck it up. And then I remember playing the first PS1 one back in the day. I was like, okay, this is not that good. But then they did that sequel that was really good, right? Spider-Man 2. Like, wow, they finally...
No, that was PlayStation 2.
That was PS2?
Yeah.
Well, they finally got it right, though. They finally got, wow, this seems pretty nice, you know, swinging around the city, and it's kind of open. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But then it seems like they didn't get it right again until what? Until this last version came out.
Patrick, tell me about Quibi.
Okay, we're already off of that. Nice. No, that's an awful ending to the topic. So, like, what the hell are you doing to me, Ian? You're killing me. So, all right, so game price up to $70. It's not a shock. With inflation, you're still getting a deal versus, you know, games 20 years ago. And looking back, I spent $80 plus tax for Street Fighter II at Capcom Worlds in 92. So games are still way less what they used to cost. And other Super Nintendo and Genesis games cost $60 or more back then. The RPGs, Nobunaga's Ambition on the NES cost more because it actually cost more than make. You know, there were games back then that cost more than even $40-$50 back then. So
yeah, I've talked about it on here before that we got a copy of Mario Kart 64 and once at the store that still had like I think the Walmart price tag on it. It was $74.99.
Was it really?
Yeah, people love to make those, you know, claims that video games weren't, you know, always this expensive, but they were, not more so.
Nintendo's expensive cards. You had to keep with the cartridges, Nintendo. You had to make it hard for emulation for me to do a certain N64 guidebook. You couldn't just go to a disc. Anyway. All right. Ian, who is watching Quibi right now?
Not me.
Did you get the trial for Quibi?
No, I didn't.
If you did back in early April, you better unsubscribe because now they're actually going to start charging people because now it's 3 months into its lifespan.
Oh, really?
So the earliest
is going to be bad.
The earliest they could have started making money was like literally like yesterday or today. I think it was like April 6th. So they made $0 unless you signed up. I think for the commercial free, I guess you could have signed up early. But for the most part, they haven't made any money until starting to now. So the hits just keep on coming for Quibi, and every article that comes out is not good for how they're being operated and how they look. We talked about the New York Times article about a month ago, right? And how that was a bad interview with Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's running the company, along with Meg Whitman from HP, former of HP. So this article is from Vulture. It's the New Yorker. Is anyone watching Quibi? The streaming platform raised $1.75 billion and secured a roster of A-list talent, but it can't get audiences to notice. So this article goes into more of the ins and outs about like how this came to be. What did it start out as? And then where are they right now? So obviously they got buy-ins from all the major Hollywood studios. They got buy-ins from Disney, Sony. And at the time, Ian, I always said, well, what is the goal of all these companies getting in bed with them? And it turns out from this article, and it's something I kind of thought about, well, if they're the ones getting paid to make the content, that they almost get a free roll. And that's basically what's happened. They got the buy-in of these big companies and all this investment because there was pretty much a guarantee that, well, if I give you whatever, $100 million, you're going to pay me eventually $100 million in order to produce content to go back onto the Quibi service.
Right.
So it's a low risk to these companies that invested for some of these, the entertainment companies. So you're basically getting a free, you know, you're basically going to break even and get investment in this company. Then who cares if it folds a couple of years from now, because we broke even. You're playing with house money at that point. Right. So that's why all these companies, because I always wonder, like, why the hell would Disney invest in this company? They have Disney Plus. They got their own, like, why would they care? Well, because it's a free investment at the end of the day.
You know? Right. You're going to get it back. Well,
in theory, you're going to get most of that.
Yes,
it's worth the small risk to you there. So, but it talked about just the type of content on here and how a lot of it was laughable. Like they talked about how there was that series that where was it one about we heard about was The Anna Kendrick comedy, anchor comedy, in which her character befriends her boyfriend's sex doll. Just bizarre sort of content that there's no way Netflix or Hulu would be like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Or Amazon would be like, yeah, that's a good idea. So it talks about how a lot of these, not all, but a lot of these ideas for shows was stuff that was already rejected from other being pitched elsewhere. So it's like the B or C grade entertainment that now comes to Quibi, for example. It's the stuff, even if you have a star vehicle, you know, you have like Kevin Hart has a series coming out. This is stuff that potentially wouldn't make it to other platforms because it's not good enough, a lot right. of stuff. So you have this weird reputation going in that all of a sudden you're like, oh, now why would I pay for this content when I know it's not premium because it was not, it couldn't make it elsewhere on paid platforms.
Yeah, it all looks like B-list stuff.
The Golden Arm Sam Raimi horror thing, which became a meme because that was the only show people knew was on Quibi. And it was funny because since there's no screen capturing built into the app, people had to record it with another cell phone. So that became a meme. It's like, well, why are you serious? Yes. So
wow.
The only promotion that went viral for Quibi was this weird Sam Raimi, like, I guess it was like a sci-fi sort of story about a woman got in love with her prosthetic golden arm, but the gold slowly poisoned her, killed her, and she wouldn't give up her golden arm. So that was a meme because that sounds like a terrible idea for a story. But it also became like a meme because people realize the only way we can see anything of this show is if someone took another, a second cell phone and screen captured it with another cell phone. So you're showing the weakness of your product through like just out of the gate, bad news. And then it talked about just how we surmise about, well, we have these two old people in their 60s running this venture that are out of touch with the current market here.
Yes.
And then they asked Meg Whitman, like, what you watch, and she doesn't, like, she's not like on social media. She's not watching. She said, like, the show, the Grant History Channel show, the documentary, is supposed to be good. Like, that's her favorite show on TV right now, and she's the CEO of this social media entertainment company. And it's just like, wow, okay, me and Ian, we're not rocket scientists, but we point out you have these old people out of touch running this company, and this is the results of it.
Yeah. The day it launched, the Quibi app rose to number 3 in Apple's App Store. By mid-June, it was number 284.
Now, I would love to have an app that's 284 in an App Store, Ian, but I didn't, you know, spend a $1.8 billion, you know, to get to that point.
Right.
Or well over a billion, we'll just say they're still going to spend money on entertainment this year there and have it in development for 2 years. It talks about how Katzenberg and Meg Whitman are at each other's necks. They work on different floors of the company. It talks about how even the micromanagement that, like, they hire these young people that might be smart, might have a vision for a good product, but since things are so micromanaged, you just become a doer. Just go do what we tell you to do. Just go do it. That's right. A great way to run a company in this day and age. So just go do what you do. We hired you for your smarts, but you're not going to allow you to be smart. We're just going to tell you to do what you do, and you do it. I mean, it's not shocking that this is the way this stuff turns out. People that were smart in other jobs, Katzenberg, obviously, Meg Whitman, she was at eBay before she went to Hewlett Packard. Like, at some point, the magic that got you to your previous point doesn't always follow through with your current venture. Times change, entertainment changes, right?
Something that I thought was interesting is, because this is kind of how I figured it. It's just when you see something like this, you almost wonder, like, how up their own ass are there? Are they? And
this article reveals a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Writer Scott Gardner said, "I can honestly say I've never been in such a cocky pitch environment. I would describe the atmosphere as Wolf of Wall Street, not in terms of actual debauchery, but it's an incredibly nice office that just goes and goes. They had two lobbies. You went in and checked out at a nice big lobby. Then you were moved to another lobby. There's massive jars of expensive, nice seeming. I like that. Nice seeming candy everywhere.
Oh, I thought you said nice seeming at first. Okay.
No, nice seeming candy everywhere. It's sleek and modern. You see hundreds of people passing by, and there's this energy of people who really believe they've got the next big thing. But why?
You don't.
That's my question.
You don't. It's done.
Yes.
It's done.
Finished.
Because now the numbers are going to start coming out. And within a month, they're going to have even more articles about, wow, how many people actually stayed out and paid for the service?
Yeah, it's just money. It's just a slow demise. This is finished. They're going to drag it out. But there's no coming back from this. You cannot turn this around.
Because a lot of this content, I thought about, well, what if you can relicense this content? If I was Netflix, I said, no, I don't want this content. Maybe Reno 911, but that's about it. I don't want the Golden Arm girl. I don't want Chrissy Teigen's court cases on – like, we don't need that shit. No one's watching it right now. Like, we don't need that, you know? Did you see the Gal Gadot thing?
No.
Oh, that's a good one. You're going to love this. This is great. So it talks about how Katzenberg is so micromanaging with stuff. He's on his phone all the time. But he still has his emails printed out by an assistant. It just shows you the different generation gap. Like, yeah, he's on his phone, he's talking to people, but it's like, I'm not working on a computer all the time looking at emails. So it's just an interesting, it gives you a look into the mindset. So when enthusing about what a show could mean for Quibi, Katzenberg would repeatedly invoke the same handful of musty touchstones. America's Funniest Home Videos, Siskel and Ebert, and Jane Fonda's Exercise Tape. This guy is living literally in the mid-80s.
Yes.
Like, this is how far back he's thinking about his form of what entertainment is. He's out of touch. When Gal Gadot came to the offices, who plays Wonder Woman, and delivered an impassioned speech about wanting to elevate the voices of girls and women, Katzenberg wondered aloud whether she might become the new Jane Fonda and do a workout series for Quibi.
Oh, boy.
Apparently, her face fell, says a person briefed on the meeting. This guy is
Jesus.
Three generations behind about what people want and sensibilities, it sounds like. Like, that's just an awful story. Probably didn't mean it maliciously. He's just so out of touch, he didn't know how it came off to Gal Gadot. Like, he's like thinking, like, oh, you're going to be in power. You're going to be doing workout videos in skimpy clothes. You know, like what? That's not what I was trying to impart to you, Mr. Katzenberg. Like, what the hell? Wow. It gets worse. Well, at a casting session this year, while watching a tape test for a Daily Essentials host who was a black man with an afro, Katzenberg said the man didn't look authoritative. And then they had to sit him down and talk to him private and say, like, you know how offensive that sounds, saying that just because he has, you know, a traditional hairstyle. Like, and then it sounded like he got it eventually. But, like, you don't want someone in charge of a media company in 2020 that has to be explained this stuff. Like you're way behind the eight ball if that's the person running your company. You know, like, that, if that's the person in charge of your content.
Yeah, you're fucked.
You're done. You can't catch up. You got to try to step aside. Maybe other people come in, but he's not the type of person that's probably going to do that if he's this much of a micromanager. Katzenberg and Whitman pointed out that they stocked the Quibi offices with young employees who are in the demographic they're trying to reach, but there was an incredible lack of knowledge of the audience and dismissiveness of the audience. Another ex-Quibite says, a thing Jeffrey always says is, I'm not a child or mother, but I made movies children and mothers loved. I know millennials better than millennials. Katzenberg had at times been well-served in his intuition, and he remained convinced of its acuity. I say, where's your data? Whitman says of their contrasting styles. He says, there is none. You just have to go with your gut. So Whitman's trying to be more reasonable, it seems like, in the approach about, we need data-driven results in what we're developing. And Katzenberg's just like, no, I helped develop Lion King, you know, almost 30 years ago. So since I did that, I know how to do this now. No, that's not how this works.
I'm sick of these fucking old white dudes thinking that one, you know, brief flash of, well, not, I mean, not brief.
Oh, he didn't have a brief.
Real.
Yeah.
It was long, but what, you know, not brief, but past success means current success. It doesn't. The world changes. Everything changes. Just because you were successful in the past doesn't mean that you can't fail now. Every project is a new project.
And you often overstate your importance. Just because you were in charge of these products, like, well, yeah, those Disney animated movies of the early 90s, like Little Mermaid and things, it's like, well, if you had a team of awesome animators and writers, just because you were the head of that operation, you got to give credit to those people. Doesn't mean you could recreate that magic in a totally different time and space.
Right.
You can't do that. Like, he did have a great idea with DreamWorks and like 3D animation and Shrek and things like, yes, that was great. That was also 25 years ago. Just about. Wow. Shrek's almost 25 years old. Holy shit. It's like late 90s, like 22 years.
I don't even know.
But eventually the magic runs out when it comes to stuff. It just does. It just, you don't have it in you anymore. Or the world has passed you by, Ian. The world's going to pass me by if it hasn't already when it comes to doing a podcast or doing online media. Like, it just, things change, you know?
Yes, sir.
So anyway, that's about what I say about Quibi. This is a long, check it out, a long article at vulture.com. I mean, it goes into even people talking about how Katzenberg, whenever he had a company, bought out like I think it was DreamWorks, where like they overpaid to make sure he wouldn't stay with the company. Now, here it is. When Comcast Universal bought DreamWorks, it was on the condition he left the company. Let's reiterate, a former friend says, Comcast chose to overpay for DreamWorks Animation to not have him there.
Wow. All right.
So there you go. And again, well, it sounds familiar. It sounds like a certain console where that you blame COVID for delays and not success, and you try to get by on past successes of yourself and employees for a new product. Wow, sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's also similarities because it sounded like to people, Jeffrey Katzenberg is the type of person that thinks he can will things into existence and will things to be successful just upon your personal spirit and working drive. And yes, you need a hard work ethic in order to be successful when it comes to things like this. Absolutely, you do. You can't get by being slovenly and things like that. But it doesn't mean if you have a bad product, it's going to be a success because you're working day and night to make it happen.
Right.
I think that's funny. This whole willing things into existence and self-help book motif bullshit about, well, you know, I'm visualizing in my mind, it's going to happen. That's not how the real world works. Nope. It can work out if you have a good product, but if you don't have something people want, it's not going to work. And that goes for Quibi or the Quibi console that's in development as well. All right, Ian, we have a Patreon poll.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You get the full video podcast. You get a writing that I do once a week. I just did one yesterday about Unsolved Mysteries. I do a hangout once a month. Bop, 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 bop. And you get to vote. You get to vote on one of these. You get to vote on a poll topic once a week.
In third place, you hate summer, patrons. What was your favorite thing about the start of summer? Were you a beach kid? 15%. I'm going to do it as a topic this summer myself. I'm going to go off. What were your favorite book series growing up or recently? 19%. Wow, these are dying deaths. And the number one place, Ian, you might have to carry a lot of this. What are games?
You say that like every week.
I know. Then I pull through. I pull it out of my butt. What are games that you should give another chance?
So there are two that I've been thinking about perhaps giving another chance to at some point. One is Halo, oddly enough.
That's actually an interesting choice.
Yeah, it's one that I always think about every once in a while, perhaps trying again, because at the base of it, I don't hate first-person shooters. I mean, there are some that I like. You know, people who listen to the podcast know that, you know, Doom, and granted, we're going way far back with that, you know, is one of my favorite games. And I've liked other first-person shooters. I liked other games that are first-person in the past. I really liked the first Metroid Prime. I actually enjoyed Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, the first Modern Warfare. I thought it was pretty good. And I did play Halo 3 a little bit when I had a 360, and I enjoyed myself with I enjoyed my time with it. I was not very good at it though, and the people I was playing with, that was around the time that I think it was Modern Warfare came out. We moved on pretty quick, and I never went back to it. And there's nothing necessarily about the story that particularly intrigues me, but I'm not into like the realistic modern day like military stuff. And I'm not particularly interested in past wars. I like, you know, the more science fiction or fantasy setting. And that's what appeals to me about Halo, was that it was a first-person shooter of some acclaim that people seemed to really enjoy, that wasn't a Call of Duty or a Medal of Honor or something like that. And I know the series has kind of gotten... its star has lost its luster as time has gone on. But every time it gets brought up, like the new, like the Master Chief Collection, I'm like, I should go back and I should just play those in single player and just see if I enjoy them, and not worry about the online modes or anything like that. But, you know, we're also kind of at that point where single player campaigns in the, like, first person shooters aren't something that I think a lot of people think of. You know, that used to be the meat and potatoes, not so much anymore. I kind of want to go back and look at those first three games and play them, and probably Reach as well, and, you know, kind of go through the story modes, because I think it's kind of a lost art, and I think I probably would enjoy it a little bit.
Masters, oh, it's on sale, Ian, $32, a Master Chief Collection on Steam. You get, yeah, you get Halo Reach. Oh no, this is a whole collection. You get the collection, Halo Reach, Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary, Halo 2 Anniversary, Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, Halo 4. Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, I might. It's just it every once a year, I think maybe I should give them a better shot than I did. Yeah. The other one is maybe Final Fantasy 14. It seemed that's the second online one. I've never done a lot of time with an MMO, but I know a lot of people who play that one, so I would probably have people to find. But MMOs to me just seem, honestly, very intimidating. And, you know, as we've talked about on the podcast before, you know, there's a lot of, they take a lot of time, and there's a lot of scheduling and things like that you've got to do to meet up with people. And I know Final Fantasy 14 is an easier online RPG to solo than other ones, but still, it just seems like a pretty big commitment. That said, I'm still interested in it. So I think those are the two that I probably need to check out.
I think I should play the first Halo, just for historical purposes, in terms of, I guess, importance to obviously Microsoft and the first Xbox.
Well, and it came out around a time when you were still playing stuff like that too. So I don't think it would be that far out of
the category
that you would like. I mean, you were playing first person shooters in that, you know, in 2000.
Yes, that was in middle. That was my junior year in college that came out. Sophomore, junior year at college. So of course I was playing fucking Rogue Spear multiplayer, I was playing Unreal Tournament 99 then. And I think the original Unreal I wasn't anymore, but Tournament 99, the first Unreal Tournament. But I was, and I did play a little bit of Halo because people were playing it. People were playing multiplayer in the fraternity, within rooms with each other. They set up rooms and they did it. It was like, you know, whatever, four players, four different Xboxes. I just didn't like it because the scope just seemed more limited than the other first person shooters at the time, and I wasn't impressed with it. The same thing with why I wasn't impressed with GoldenEye, because I was used to better games. For a console, GoldenEye is amazing, but in the grand scheme of first person shooters, it's not as special when you line up against all the other first person shooters at the time.
And I think that's another reason why I wanted to play Halo, is because, you know, from what I remember hearing, Halo was supposed to be the first-person shooter on a console that actually felt like a first-person shooter on a computer.
Sure.
You know, I feel like, you know, GoldenEye, yeah, I agree. That's also why I didn't like GoldenEye. It's why I didn't really mess with any first-person shooters on the PlayStation or the PlayStation 2. But Halo is supposed to be, you know, this big step that presented you, and it makes sense because it was on a Microsoft console, but it gave you a... And this was also still at a time where PCs and, you know, computers were seen as, or PCs and consoles were seen as a big gap. It gave you that experience.
Sure. So I think I should play that first Halo. Even it's so funny. The original Xbox is probably the only console. It's the only console I don't own where I don't have an excuse, because I've seen at the swap meet over the past 10 years dozens of times, and could have bought an Xbox for $20 or $30 so many times, and just never did it. And I still don't know why to this day I never did that. I just never bought one, and then either had it modded or just had it. Like, I should have an original Xbox. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, it's one of the few consoles I've never owned, even temporarily. Like, I even owned an N64 temporarily back in like 2000 because I wanted to play No Mercy when it came out. So I went and I bought a used N64 and kept it around for fucking 2 months, played the shit out of No Mercy, and then got rid of it. I owned a Super Nintendo at one point in time. I know people think that's crazy, but I did, you know, but I got rid of it. And Xbox, I've never owned one, not even for, you know, a week.
And now the original Xbox is like where the NES was like 20 years ago. Like now it's like retro to a lot of these kids now, or now they're like in their 20s or 30. Yeah. They grew up with the Xbox. It's so weird to think about, but that's what it is. You know, like
I've talked to you about it. I mean, the PS2 and the Xbox, you know, GameCube is very popular. N64 stuff is always popular. But, you know, right now, the sections that I see people browsing the most are the GameCube, the PS2, and the Xbox, because it's exactly like you said. You know, these people are finally getting money and jobs, and now it's their turn to go buy, you know, go rebuy their youth.
$100 for an OG Xbox with one controller and hookups, $100.
I mean, before COVID, those were like $50 to $60.
Okay,
COVID
COVID
has spiked the shit out of everything.
Okay, so, all right, so 50 was more reasonable, 50 to 60. But probably the game price has gone up. I think I've seen some sports game prices go up for even like last generation or two generations back. So it's a weird time right now. N64 sports games even, I think, went up in value, some of them from what I saw. There's some weird stuff happening right now that... Well, that'll be a podcast topic next week. So yeah, I think I got to play Halo. I'm going to give, I gave it second chances on the NES marathon every year about Mega Man, playing through Mega Man's. I should Mega Man X though. I haven't played a lot of Mega Man X. That I should.
Oh, the first one is fantastic. The first one's so good.
Is it better than the other two? Two of the Super Nintendo. Those I should give another chance. Donkey Kong Country, I gave a second chance. For a lot of times, I never liked the feel of Donkey Kong Country as a kid. Originally, my friends had it, and I just never liked it as a platformer. I know I sound crazy because people, it's a classic, but I just never liked it as a platformer. I just didn't like how it felt, and I've played through a lot of it. I streamed a lot of it back in like January, and I gave it a second chance. I should give it a third chance. I should play through the entirety of Donkey Kong Country.
I can actually say that's one that I had always intended to give a second chance to, and actually did sometime within the past year. So I always said that I hated Donkey Kong Country. I didn't like it when it came out.
It just didn't feel right to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember not liking it, and maybe it was the age. Maybe it was, I don't know. I did not care for it. And I've always said that. And I know like various people have always taken issue with that. Bonnie always took issue with it. She loves the, you know, the Donkey Kong Country games. And Gerard, the completionist, has always, you know, we've joked about it because he loves the second one. It's like his favorite game of all time. And I just couldn't get into him. But when Bonnie got a Super Nintendo Mini for her birthday like a year ago or 2 years ago, we finally pulled it out recently, and she was like, "You want to play Donkey Kong Country?" And I said, sure, let's go for it. I generally don't like it, but you know, I'll play whatever you want to play is cool. You know, I'll have fun doing that. And I enjoyed it. I very much enjoyed Donkey Kong Country. When I revisited it, I was like, yeah, this is a lot better than I gave it credit for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're being crazy. But then again, like I'm the person that didn't like, you know, the Super Nintendo NBA Jam back in the day because it wasn't the arcade. Like that's how particular I was about some of this stuff.
No, I get it. Yeah, you know, weird kids.
I didn't like the Ninja Turtles arcade on the NES because it would pale in comparison to the arcade, you know, things like
that. I still don't like the Ninja Turtles arcade on the NES. I think it's a bad, it's admirable, but it admirable doesn't mean it plays well.
No, it plays like chunks to me.
It's very chunky and very boring.
Chrono Trigger, I should give a second chance. My story at Chrono Trigger is that when Super Nintendo emulation got big when I was in college, they figured out SNES 9X and ZSNES in the late 90s were getting there. That's when that blew up and people were playing a lot of RPGs, at least that I knew, like on my freshman floor. One kid almost dropped out of school because he became obsessed with Super Nintendo RPGs. It just played him all day. He wouldn't go to class.
I think you've mentioned him out in here.
Yeah, before. It was across the hall. His name was Alan. Nice kid. I think he got in trouble though. He literally would just stop doing work. Like he got obsessed with the RPGs. But when I played Chrono Trigger for like, I want to say I played it for like a week. I got probably 80% into the game or 2/3. I played it for hours and hours. But then I made the mistake of going online and looking like, oh my God, there's like 30 different endings to this game, all based upon these different scenarios. And it pulled me out of the game. It was like, it was like almost breaking the fourth wall. It was like, but now I'm not going to get the best ending potentially, and I'm going to get a shitty ending. And like, it ruined the game for me at the time. I can't explain it. I just didn't want to play it. So I got to try to unremember all that crap and just play through the game again.
Yeah. I that's one that I need to do as well. One game, and it's funny because there was like a Twitter prompt or something that brought it up in my mind, but there is one game that I will not ever be giving another chance to, and that is Final Fantasy VI. Final Fantasy III in the US. Not because it's a bad game. I've enjoyed most of my time with it. But the first time I played it, and it, when you brought up Chrono Trigger, it reminded me. First time I played Final Fantasy VI was on an emulator. High school, probably my senior year.
Emulator.
Because I didn't own a Super... I hadn't owned a Super Nintendo yet at that point. So I was playing, I think, on SNES 9X. And I got about three quarters of the way through the game, and my save state corrupted.
Oh.
So I was pissed. I took a break. Didn't have any backup save states because I was dumb.
You used the one number? You didn't use the multiple numbers?
Well, I did have like a backup save state, but it was I would have to go back like 5 hours, and I was just pissy, and I was like, whatever, I'm done. So then I tried it again with an actual cartridge when I did own a Super Nintendo for a summer at my first apartment, and got about halfway through it, and the battery gave out on the cartridge. The last time I tried playing Final Fantasy VI was after PlayStation compilations came out. I think that's Anthology that had 5 and 6 on it. And I tried playing 6 again, and I got right just about up to where I had gotten the first time, which was very near the end of the game. And the save file on my the entire memory card corrupted. So at that point, I just threw my hands up, and I was like, I'm never playing this game. I mean, that's three tries I've given it, and all three times my save files have corrupted. And I was just like, all right, that's it, I'm done.
It's fate. Is there any PC ones from like the 90s that you would give a second chance that you didn't like originally? CD-ROM error, or you know,
actually one that might upset people. I really need to try the Age of Empires games again.
Oh, wow. You never played those. You didn't like them?
No, I did. I just didn't necessarily care for them at the time, but Everyone speaks so highly of them. And I think I might be at a point where I'd enjoy them more.
It's more, you know, it's more micro than obviously Civilization. You know, you're commanding individual units. So,
right.
It's enjoyable. I played the first one. I think the first one I played, how did I get the first one? Was that a demo that Microsoft gave out? How did I get that originally?
I did play like everyone had the first one. I don't know how.
They really just gave out the first one to everyone. If you got Windows 98 or whatever the fuck it was.
Every fucking gateway came with a copy of Age of Empires.
Yeah, how did I get that? I kept all my PC software. I have all my original stuff for the most part. I don't think I have any Goblins 2 game anymore. I might have
to... Ooh, Goblins is so good.
That I should give a second chance. We had Goblins 2. Still love going to KB toy stores early 90s, like 91, 92. With my sister, and then they had all the Sierra games in the bargain bin in the front, all the software. So we bought like Goblins 2, and that was a difficult game when you're like 12.
They are hard games. I went through the Goblins games, I want to say again, maybe 5 years ago. I think they were all up on GOG or something like that. I played them recently. They're great games, but yeah, they're difficult.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I want to go through Return to Zork ever again in my fucking life, though. That's for sure. I don't want to do that. I'm trying to think if I should give a second chance to I played Police Quest 1 and 3. I never played 2 or 4.
Fuck the Police Quest
series. Not the police, you don't like what's that guy's name? He's still trying to make games, I think. What was that officer's name? Trying to think if
there's anything. There's a whole story on how shitty that whole thing was.
Oh, with him being involved?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fucking
California story. Highway Patrolman. I'm trying to think was there any game I bought that was PC? Since I bought most of my games I bought in the 90s were PC. Was there any stuff I bought that I just didn't like or just said, nah, I'm not gonna play that again?
Myth. I bought Myth 2 because I had a buddy in high school who loved it and kept telling me that I would enjoy Myth, and I bought it and I hated it. I'm not good at like the real time stuff though at all, like the strategy. So
would you give it a second chance though?
I probably would, because I was looking at it again the other day. I was like, I wonder if maybe I just was missing something.
What's up?
That was a game that seemed like it was, well liked when I looked back into it again. It wasn't just that I, bought a bad game. Who made it? Myth 2. Oh, it was Bungie. So Bungie's come up twice today.
What was the first time?
Halo.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
maybe I'm just going to give Bungie a second chance.
Why that Bungie multi-pack? Remember the PC multi-packs where they bundled up random fucking games and they put cellophane on them?
Oh, yeah.
Like it was like four games they put together.
Yep.
CompUSA with your computer. So that was the best. But I can't remember some of those. But a lot of them were trashed up. You know who used to do that? Like a BJ's Wholesale Club would do that. Or whatever you had in New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think, what did we have? I think it was BJ's.
They'd bundle like five-year-old PC games together. You know, they put them together. And there might be one or two good games out of like four that you could do. Oh, this is a game I should give a second chance. The LucasArts games. The LucasArts adventure games, for some reason, I never wrapped my head around them. I never actually beat Sam & Max Hits the Road.
Oh, buddy. Buddy, come on.
And I had it. The great LucasArts, they did the six packs, and that was it. I never beat that. I never got into Day of the Tentacle. Those are the
two. I kind of want to hang up on you.
Fate of Atlantis, I believe I beat, because that was in that pack as well.
Good, too.
And in that pack was, I think Rebel Assault 2 was in that pack. They give you the demo for, like, X-Wing or TIE Fighter, but I already had those in the box. Those are the best. Those we're going off tangent. Those are the best. Those LucasArts, like, it was like $50 for like five games and a demo. They were such good values of things. But I should give those are the games I should give Day of the Tentacle another chance for sure. And I should give Sam & Max, I played through like most of it because I love that concept. But Day of the Tentacle, I never gave a shot in hell back in the day. So that I should do again. And I probably have them somewhere. Or just buy them on good old games for $1. It doesn't make any sense to try to play the games. Just buy them for $1. That's how they get you. So, all right. Well, thanks for that CU podcast. Patreon poll topic.
Yeah.
We have a Q&A in the CU podcast.
No.
This is from at NickD821. What are your thoughts on AVGN appearing in Irate Gamer's next video?
I should have asked this. This should have been an Ian asks. Can we redo this? I'm going to re-ask this.
All right. Re-ask it to me, Ian.
Completely unnecessary fan. The unnecessary fan asks, nope, that's wrong. What am I looking at?
This here? Is why you don't ask the questions.
Fine, you just do it. Just do it.
Okay.
So, what talk?
I think we have to redo the whole segment. All right.
Q&A time on the CU podcast. Ian asks, what are your thoughts on AVGN appearing in Irate Gamer's next video? Pat, do tell.
And that's from NickD821, Ian.
It is.
Not your first podcast rodeo. So I was kind of – this came out of nowhere. This was like about a week ago. Or the Irate Gamer, Chris Bors, who's been on YouTube since basically almost the beginning, and he was one of the early partners – doing his Angry Gamer shtick, which obviously, I mean, it's not controversial. He lifted from James doing the AVGN stuff, and he plagiarized a couple of early videos. This has all gone down in history. We know that this stuff happened like 14 years ago at this point, 13, 14 years ago. But he still does every once in a while. He does his, he does the Irate Gamer series. He's an Angry Gamer. But he at this point in time, though, with his career, he does a puppet show for children with Minecraft puppets, and he does like toy reviews, and he does blind box, like unpacking of crap, like Five Nights at Freddy's sort of stuff. And he's been successful at it, so good for him. Like his second YouTube career. But I think he still does these Irate Gamer videos every once in a while. So now he came out with a teaser to do Dick Tracy, and then there's a shot of James at the end saying, oh, you'd expect this to happen, and it's going to come out 2020. So what are my thoughts? Hey, if James wants to do it, James wants to do it. I think James is mellow, laid back, and he doesn't hold the grudge against Chris Bors for things. And James is the last person in the world to hold a grudge. It's like, whatever, it's not worth it. So Chris probably came to James and said, do you want to do this? And James said, okay, I'll do it. I mean, Chris has emailed, or he had representatives email me twice over the, I'd say, past 2 or 3 years. I've been emailed a couple times asking if I wanted to work with Chris. Not sure why the emails didn't come from Chris himself. Maybe he was embarrassed, but he had a representative for some reason email me and ask. a couple times, and I just didn't get back to him. It's like, what am I going to do? And plus, I have loyalty to James, and like, why would I do that? But no, my thoughts is that, hey, if it's fun, it's fun. If James, I guarantee you, you know, James' involvement wasn't coming up with the brainstorming the idea. It's just like, okay, you sent me a script. It's fun. Let's do it. The same way how when I work with James the past couple times, here's a script. Do you like the idea? You can get on board. It's not terrible. Let's do it. I never felt any sort of ill will towards Chris Boers. The only thing I didn't like what Chris ever did was he did this expose tell-all interview 5 years ago, where I'm going to tell you the real story, which was filled with just blatant disinformation and straight-out fabrication about him claiming that James sabotaged his career with the Game Trailers contest for Out Nerd the Nerd. That's where Chris first showed his videos, and that's where, like, Derek Alexander, Happy Video Game Nerd, who we like, Derek, he won that contest, Derek, back in, that was like 2007 or so. Derek won that contest. And Chris claims he pulled it out of his butt that, like, James went to Game Trailers and told them not to have Chris win the contest. And like, stuff that he just totally made up. And people called him out for him. This was 5 years ago. And I guess, I don't know what Chris was thinking at the time, but that's the only thing that upset me, is that Chris, years later, made up this shit about James that was not true at all. But if James... But if he apologized to James and made amends for everything, then I'm cool with it. I can't be more angry at it than James would be at this point. I mean, that's the only thing I could say. If it's a fun video, it's a fun video. As someone who's worked with James at this point numerous times, like, if James is so laid back, as long as you're not doing something terrible, he's okay with it. And he can get on board. If it's something really cool, he gets excited about it, then it becomes a better project. But this is probably going to be something where it's just James, you know, obviously he's going to be filming something in his nerd room, and then he sends it to Chris. They edit it together, and it'll be entertaining. This would have been obviously a lot bigger news if it was like 10 years ago, obviously in the heyday of, you know,
I think that's kind of the point now. I mean, this is not to say that James is not big. He sure is, but this is after,
it's a little too late for it to be as big a deal as what it would have been. That's all.
Well, and I think that's the whole point. I just think it's something fun they're doing. I don't think they necessarily care.
It's like when Freddy versus Jason came out. It came out about 9-10 years too late.
Sure. Yes.
Like that, Freddy versus Jason should have came out like 1990, and it came out with the lovely Kelly Rowland. What was that? Early 2000s. It was.
I think it was 2000.
Three.
Yeah. It should have. My God.
2003. Well, holy shit! 17 years ago. Yeah. That.
Sorry. I'm just thinking about how Jason Goes to Hell is the worst movie ever made. It's so bad. It's not even fun to watch.
Which had the cameo of Freddy's claws to pull it.
Yes, at the end. That's the only thing that was good about that movie.
But that was like 9 years
ever. It took them forever to capitalize on.
But I like Freddy versus Jason for what it is. I thought it was okay. Like,
it was fine.
But anyway,
it's fine.
Yeah, so this video will be fine. It'll probably be on Chris's channel. And people will watch it and enjoy it. Probably for what it is, you know. It's like all of us, you know, we're all getting older. I think James is turning 40. I think his birthday is coming up pretty soon. I believe it's in late July. I can't remember. I'm 40. I'm sure Chris Boers is probably getting close to 40. We're all getting old. We gotta bury the hatches when it comes to all these, like, you know, internet squabbles. When it comes to, you know, these things, for the most part, there's always those people out there that, like, always will spread lies about you years and years later. That, you know. That's a whole other story. So, all right. I wish it, you know, it's going to be good. If, like I said, if James trusts, it'll be good. He's involved. It'll be good. Right.
All right.
Are you going to watch it, Ian? You ever watch any Irate Gamer stuff in the day?
No.
You ever watch any AVGN stuff?
Probably like three or four.
Did you watch the combat one from the fall?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was nice.
It was nice. That you know, I will take that. It was nice. That's like, that warms my heart. That's like the passive, almost aggressive compliment. It was nice. It was like telling a 5-year-old, "Oh, that drawing's nice that you put on the fridge." It was nice. It almost looks like a dinosaur. It kind of.
I don't like video game content. I just don't.
You don't like stuff. We haven't done. It's been almost 3 years since you appeared in an NES Punk video.
Thank fuck.
Oh no! You avoided. You had the cameo. You had the cameo 2 years ago in the 10th anniversary. You did. That's
right. Oh yeah, the brief thing I had to do at the other lunar location. Yeah, remember that.
All right, that's all I'm going to say. James is cool. I'm cool. Best of luck to all involved there.
All right. Well, that's the end of this CU podcast.
That's the end. That was a 2-hour 10 one. Wow, this one went longer. We had a long intro.
Yep. It sure did. But it's, the intro didn't even feel that long, but something was long.
What were we saying there, huh? We're, okay.
Gross.
So, yeah. Hey, remember, everyone, I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. There. I donated all the stuff to the ACLU about a week ago. I think I mentioned that last week. If not, I did. I got the payments in there. So, yeah, I'm available there. And then I'm on Twitch, twitch.tv/ContryCode. Ian's got his Extra Napkins podcast on the side. He still has Yokoi Kids, I believe. Is that a podcast too? Or no,
it's not really a podcast. It's just a website.
It's just a website.
That's a bunch nice of stuff. Our zine is actually almost done. I finished my writing for it. So, That should be out shortly. I'll talk more about that when that gets printed.
That's nice.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be printed and like distributed and not just a PDF.
No, it's going to be printed.
How are people actually going to get it?
Mail order.
You're going to do a PDF though, right? Like,
No, I don't think we will. Rick does zines all the time, and he's printing it up. And then I think the profits are going to go to a charity.
Okay, you should.
But it's big.
At some point, if some of the artists, so you actually can market it to people to find out about it. I'm marketing this again.
We'll see. We're not in it for money.
You want people to find out about your.
Well, that's the thing. Rick does comics. He knows very much how to get zines distributed.
Is this going to be distributed? Like, is this going to be sold?
We're putting it together. We're printing it. We're selling it.
I'm shark tanking you right now. I'm like,
I don't need it to be shark tanked is the thing. It's just the zine for Game Boy stuff.
What are your numbers? What are your projected numbers for next year? What are your projected sales for 2021?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go order a cheeseburger.
Where are you going to order from?
I don't know, but it sounds good.
Raglan? Got to pick up at Raglan if you go to Raglan.
No, I can't do that. Got to stay in.
Well, everything's going to be closed. California, everything's closed again by Tuesday, they said. Everything's closed again. All the restaurants.
Just restaurants.
Restaurants and bars and anything indoor. Not your stores, right? It's just, what is it?
California. We don't know, but I mean, like I said, this week is a write-off for me. I've got to sit home.
Sure. Yeah, they're closing up stores. Or not stores. They're closing up businesses.
Restaurants.
Bars entirely. Like, not like, which should have been never reopened to begin with. But bars entirely. No, I think restaurants you can eat outside but not inside. So
gotcha.
So because I saw people at the Portland Fish Shop yesterday, and like there was a few people outside, but most people were inside. And I was just like, okay, sure. Just cough in my face. I mean, at that point, you might as well do that. All right, for Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. Hopefully, Holodeck Suite Ian will be back next week in real form.